Ladies and gentlemen, what is up? After 2 months of being off the air, we are back. It is Inside the Game, episode 58. It's January 15th, 2013. I mean, since we've been gone, Jeff got married. DeMuslim got a PhD in chemical engineering. Idra is now the foremost professor on anger management. I had 5 kids, and here we are now. After a long hiatus, we are back. What's up?
Productive. It was a very productive Christmas break, is what you could say there.
Yeah.
Intensely busy.
Absolutely. People were still this day like, I don't understand. I mean, Jeff got married, but that doesn't mean he couldn't do the show. It's like, yeah, you're right, technically, I guess. But there we go. And, of course, we kind of snuck him on, but welcome. What's up, DeMuslim?
Hey, pretty good. Pretty good, dude.
It's been a while since we've had you on.
It has been a while, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. And people are like, we got an EG crew tonight. You're right. Deal with it. What's up?
Yeah, let's get it all out there right now. Weed selling out. It's all EG.
See, they're all wearing EG jerseys, but I'm wearing my Invincible t-shirt that my mom gave me for Christmas. Yes.
Nice.
Kirkman all the way. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about tonight. We made a New Year's resolution, though, for Inside the Game. And that's that we're not going to really talk about results anymore. I mean, granted, you know, if a 14-year-old kid from Peru suddenly comes to Korea and starts destroying everyone, we might start taking a look at theirs. But overall, we want to talk about, you know, some of the things going on, competitions overall from a player's perspective. And, of course, with HOTS coming, that means that there's going to be a shitload to talk about. In fact, Idra, you've pretty much been playing exclusively HOTS now for, what, a few weeks?
Well, I was on like a month vacation through the end of December and the beginning of January. But yeah, even before that, I hadn't been playing much Wings of Liberty because MLG is announced as HOTS. IPL is going to have a HOTS Invitational, I think, there. And ASL, I expect to be HOTS. Just pretty much everything is waiting until March and the full release to start up their new leagues. So I imagine everyone except for the IPL main event is going to be HOTS. And I'm not planning on going out to Pro League because with the TL partnership, we already have plenty of players there to make the Pro League roster. So I'm just not going to go out there until after HOTS releases. That way I can focus on the new game and hopefully get a leg up on that.
And what about In Control of the Muslim as far as HOTS is? And we're going to go right into Heart of the Swarm. So what's your involvement been so far?
For me, I was actually, like we kind of talked about over Christmas break, I took a 5-week break. It was both getting married, then also the honeymoon and seeing family, which I didn't get to see all year long, so it was an extended break. But in my 15 years or whatever it is of StarCraft, I've never stepped away from the game that long. I think the longest I've ever not played a game is like a week and a half or 2 weeks. So it actually hurt at the end. And I could tell you, I was tweaking out. I was grumpy. My Christmas break was great at the beginning, and it progressively got worse just because I was further and further away from StarCraft. It's a long-winded way of saying, coming back, I've been playing Wings of Liberty. Just because IPL has announced that their qualifiers is in Wings of Liberty,
right.
And I want to do that. After, I think it's IPL will be the last one for me, and then I'll make the full switch to HOTS. But I still watch, you know, White Raw played Idra today on stream, so I was kind of checking that out. There's a lot of air units in the matchups for Protoss, which is, like, very different from Wings of Liberty, so I'm a little bit worried that I'm not putting in the time with something that could be completely different, but I'm enjoying getting back into it. I gotta be honest with you, like, Heart of the Swarm still has this, like, fluctuating feel to it, so getting back into the game, I want to play the one that I know, it's a little bit like riding a bike in the sense that I know what to do, it's just getting my mechanics non-rusty and stuff like that, so.
Well, let's actually just jump right in and start talking about Heart of the Swarm. There's been several balance updates, since we've last had the show. In fact, I think when we last had the show, it was one of the big updates where they had changed Terran quite a bit. And that coincides quite nicely with the recent patch that just went out that changed Terran quite a bit. As we put them up, you know, Idra, I go back to you again. As much as you've been playing, I have to imagine that this affected the game quite a bit more than maybe some of the other patches.
It's hard to tell because at this point I get almost all Protosses. I hit like one or two random Zergs if there's not any Protoss with high enough MMR. Very, very few Terrans, and the ones who are playing just aren't as good as most of the Zergs and Protosses, so they kind of just lose. So it's hard to really comment on CVT. The medevacs were incredibly strong with the heal upgrade that got removed. The new Reaper seems like almost purely a scout. It's just like, even if it gets in your mineral line when it's undefended, one or two drones die, maybe. And that's if you mess up. And the new Raven seems like it could be good, but the delay is pretty long. So once you get more comfortable with that and learn how to deal with it properly, I think you're going to be able to split out any kind of high-priority target. And if it's low priority, then, you know, I mean, it does splash damage, but
so this is out. It doesn't phase you at all, this patch.
Not a whole bunch. I think the switch on Envision and the Time Spell, I think that's a good thing, because I think that was going to be incredibly strong once people got better with it. And as is, it's going to be kind of gimmicky, because it's just like, maybe you use it to supplement an Immortal All-In or something like that, but it's not really going to have a ton of use. Like, it's just something that maybe you do. And I'm not sure how the balance between the recall mana and that works. Like, if you cast that, maybe you can't recall, in which case no one will ever use it, because recall is always going to be way more valuable.
Just to jump in real quick with that, like, for me, I think it was certainly closer to overpowered on the Oracle, but I think moving it to the Mothership is an insanely stupid, silly thing. I think it's incredibly unimportant as a spell that comes off the Mothership. The Mother Core, I think I understand that. It's a little bit cooler. But I like Time Stop on the Oracle because I thought it was underused. Like, if anything, I think they should have reduced the radius, maybe the amount of time or the amount of slow that it does. Because, again, on the Oracle itself, I think that is too powerful. But, like what Greg's talking about, it not having a lot of utility, I would say that as the game goes on, we'd see a lot of really cool potential for it. I don't think it would necessarily be like a, oh, I'm an Oracle Time Stop opener. You know, like, that's what I do. I would more likely to see it where I have two or three Oracles, and it's like minute 30, and you realize you're running from the final last units, and you fucking Time Stop them, and they can't chase you, or they can't run away, the crowd's going crazy. I think that's amazing.
Wasn't one of the purposes of kind of like the Time Stop on the Oracle was to give it purpose after, say, a harassment opening or something to that effect. I mean, couldn't they, like, increase the energy overall and maybe keep with that? Because, honestly, someone could kind of infinistop you.
They liked it as, like, an alternative to the Entomb spell. That's one of the ways they talked about it. So it was kind of, it had the same effect, kinda, except you couldn't just kill the crystals or get bogged down by the fact that you had to kill the crystals. But then I was seeing cool applications, like it was stopping people from dodging storms. It was, you'd like jump up into their main, and as the army's coming up to respond to it, you drop down a time stop, so they have to pass through this incredibly slow moving thing. Like, I saw a lot of utility that way, and when you put it on the Mama Core, I still see that potential. So this is like my statement on how I liked it on the Oracle. But sure. The Mama Core, okay. The Mothership, absolutely garbage. I don't like that at all.
Go ahead.
I think what happened is they are actually just holding firm to the Mothership is not a competitive unit. Like, it does not pay for itself anymore. I think they're just not concerned at all with that. Yeah. And it's purely to have it on the Mothership core. And I think the big thing with the Oracle is just, it is actually a pretty good harass unit now. If it gets into an undefended mineral line, all the workers die. And it can beat a queen 1-1 now. So to have a harass unit that was that good, like, it would become too good to be able to open up with 3 or 4 or 5 of them, and then also have them be super, super useful in battles coming up. So I think that's what they were worried about. And instead of going through the hassle of trying to tune it in and actually get it to a reasonable level of strength, they just moved it. So it would be better if they actually put in the effort to do it right. But yeah,
and obviously things are still, everything that we talk about tonight, exclusively to Heart of the Swarm, is obviously they've been changing a lot. Inserting this, taking this out, spell here to this unit. So lots still can change. But let's ask the Muslim then, based off of these changes, you know, what are your thoughts on the state of Terran? I mean, is it discouraging at all to hear Idris say there's not even that many Terrans out there?
I mean,
you're a dying breed, sir.
It is a little, but there wasn't really, like, if you've been playing Wings of Liberty recently at the top level too, there hasn't really been that many Terrans there either.
You're right.
Like, if I think about the start of Wings of Liberty, when every tournament I attended was like 90% Terrans, it's kind of refreshing, actually. Like, it's just the way things go. Like, it's a massive change of events. But Terran in HOTS, like, I played Greg a couple of weeks ago when the medevacs were healing as much as they did, and it was just silly. I didn't have to move anymore. It was so, like, there's things that they're reverting that were a little too strong, I'll say. But they're adding stuff, like, such as no siege tank upgrade required anymore.
Right.
Like, that kind of stuff's cool. I like that. That means that there's going to be a lot of new builds coming out where you can just throw in two tanks as you're, like, meant to be going bio anyway, just to get like a faster third base and stuff. Like, they're making things more, put Terran more versatile, and it was already a very versatile race, but they're not making it so you definitely have to go down this path or this path. So I like that, and right now I don't find it discouraging for Terrans at all. I just think with so much new stuff, like Reapers are a totally different unit than what they used to be. There's going to be a lot of stuff that Terrans have to find out again. Like, if you can scout with a Reaper and you see this happening, maybe then you can open up Greedy with 3 CCs and throw down 2 tanks since you don't need Siege Tech anymore. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I haven't really experimented with.
Awesome. Is it kind of crazy to think that in 56 days this game is dropping?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that soon, actually.
I know. Like, when you think it's March, but when you put a number like 56 on there, it's like, that's pretty soon. That's pretty soon. Based off that number, 56 days, from each of you, how close, and maybe, Idra, you kick this one off, you're the one that's been playing it the most, probably, but how close do you think they are getting, at least to a retail level of balance?
Given how many changes Wings of Liberty has gone through, and to look back on where it was when they released, I think they're already that good, but that good was okay. Pretty fucking bad. So I don't know if you really want to say that.
Okay.
There's still a lot of problems, and the biggest problem is they're not really getting a good quality beta test at pro levels. There's very, very few true professional players playing, especially with any kind of consistency. So it's really, really hard to tell. Like, I can beat any Terran on the server pretty easily right now, but that's kind of just because I can just out-macro them and just attack move with Mutiling Baneling. Like, I don't know if that's really representative of balance or not. So it's really hard to judge. And I feel kind of bad for them, because without that information, it's hard for them to really get, you know, the information they need to make proper changes. I think it'll come out pretty bad, but then everyone's going to switch over immediately, and then they'll start getting that information, and then they can start moving towards a properly balanced game pretty quickly.
I don't know. I kind of, as standard, I would take Greg's statement, mostly agree with it, but then temper it a little bit with, I feel, more optimism. I remember the Wings of Liberty beta, and there was some ridiculous shit that came out, and also early Wings of Liberty,
yeah,
where they just made mistakes on a global scale, and it was like, well, now the Roach is actually kind of invincible, and we're all going to die. Whereas I feel with Heart of the Swarm, while they're not getting the saturation that they did with Wings of Liberty in terms of so many pro gamers playing it exclusively in a lot, that they got a lot of data, I feel like they are better. They're more seasoned. Like, I'm actually, if Heart of the Swarm were to release right now, obviously it would not be the game we'd hope, but I think it would be playable, and I think it'd be better than Wings of Liberty. And I think that's, I really feel strong about those two statements in particular, and I feel like that makes this scene really excitable, as far as I'm concerned. I can tell you, from a Protoss perspective, the innovation and the new strategies and the new units that are being used is really exciting. PvP is actually one of the best matchups in the game, which is the weirdest effing thing to say. but it really is. A mirror matchup, in my opinion, is literally one of the best matchups in this new game to come out. So, I mean, I look at the time, 50, 60 days, that's, you know, or 56 days, I think it is, or whatever.
Yeah.
That sounds like little, but I think it's enough. I think the game, when it is released, will be better than Wings of Liberty when it was released. And I think it's going to be released into a very excitable crowd, because I know I'm jumping topic a little bit here, but we're actually already seeing kind of a resurgence in stream viewers. People are coming back to the game, and I think it's an anticipation of StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm, as opposed to, like, some tournament announced that, you know, there's going to be a deathmatch where somebody actually dies at the end of the series. It's not, there's not some outside factor. It's actually just the game itself. And that's really exciting, because I think this beta is a lot less exciting than Wings of Liberty was, because of the novelty of StarCraft II.
Well, and I guess to go to the next question, which would be, do you feel like the general populace is getting more excited as we get closer to HOTS? Do you think that's going to have a good effect on everything overall?
Viewership has definitely gone up. That's undeniable since I got back since the new year. And there aren't any real tournaments going on right now. I mean, there's IEM in Poland, but that's not a big deal. The player list isn't that big. IEM is always like on the bottom tier of the good tournaments. It doesn't generate huge viewership. So there's nothing that's pulling people back to Wings of Liberty. It's just people coming back, either because it's the new year, they have stuff out of the way, they're ready to get back into StarCraft II and esports, or it's because of excitement for HOTS. And, you know, that seems much more likely than they just randomly decided that now was the time. So I definitely think things are looking up, and I I don't know. I don't want to say that it's going to be bigger than it was at the beginning of Wings of Liberty, but there has been almost no excitement generated around HOTS. There's been no big HOTS tournaments, nothing like that, that would actually hype people up for it, and they're still coming back in pretty big numbers. Like, my viewership has maybe almost doubled in the few days I've been streaming since I came back.
And you've only been playing HOTS, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Stefano playing Wings of Liberty today hit 10,000 too, yeah, which is about the numbers that we... I mean, obviously, people were peaking higher than that, but I think just... And here's the other thing, too. I want to put this to words, because a lot of people hear this anyways, and they kind of add the literature there. But we're not saying, when we say, like, return to good numbers, in no context are we like, finally, we'll surpass the League of Legends denizens, and we'll conquer the world. I don't think so. It's just about our community being happy with the numbers, and it being sustainable, and growth. We were very interested in growth. It used to be, you know, back when Wings of Liberty launched, there was no other game being played competitively, so then we did talk about ourselves as the best game, the most watched game in the world. But now it's more under the context of, like, can we still remain on that pedestal and still, you know, have enough numbers that sponsors get excited about it?
When did you guys start streaming, all of you? Like, how far into – did any of you – I mean, was anyone streaming beta? Like, very little. I remember, like
– some people were, but I was not.
Okay. Like, LZ Gamer was one of the first guys I remember seeing. And I remember it was, like, Orb. Orb back then,
Yeah, very few people did it in Brood War. I remember when StarCraft 2 came out, there was, like, streaming was still kind of a novelty thing. Like, if you had the machine and if you took the time to do it, then you did it. But it was, like, I want to say, like, literally a month after StarCraft 2 where it became, okay, now you need to get on the streaming bandwagon because everyone's watching this. So for me, it was, like, I think... I remember I set up my stream when I was commentating for NASL, actually. So that's like 5 or 6 months into StarCraft II, I think.
I don't know. Late 2010?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is 2010 the year it released?
Yeah.
Yeah, then mine was December 2010 or January 2011 in the winter there.
It released in April, right? Is that it was release date, I believe?
Was it?
Or was it August?
No, that was beta. It released like August or September, I think.
August, I think you're right, yeah.
And do you guys remember how many numbers you'd pull on your first streams? Some of your first streams?
It was 4,000 or 5,000, but that was while I was still in Korea. And I hadn't, like, no one thought of anything. I didn't realize or didn't consider the fact that that was middle of the night for my target audience.
Sure.
And then as soon as I got back to the U.S., it was straight up to like 10,000, 12,000.
Interesting.
Yeah, for me, it was like I start off with, I want to say like 1,500 to 2K. And that was actually, I mean, when streaming really got popular, it didn't start off the way it was. Like, Greg's numbers were really high, but Greg was late to streaming by like 5 months or whatever it was, six months. But at the beginning, it was like the biggest streams were 3,000. That was a crazy number. And then once the big dogs, like the White Ryadras, Stefano, some of those guys, once they started getting like 10,000, then it was mind-blowing.
I mean, it really kind of puts it into perspective, like what everyone expects to get now, and as more and more games. I mean, it's just like Magic: The Gathering this weekend, you know, 10,000 people watching that stuff. Whereas, like, 8 months ago for them, if 2,000 people were watching, they would be flabbergasted.
Yeah.
But the bar is certainly much higher, and I wonder how much. I mean, I've noticed, like, Heart of the Swarm not hardly ever beating out Wings of Liberty except for under a few cases and then right around the time that it was released. But I imagine that, you know, as we get closer and closer, there's probably going to be more people streaming and more people interested. I think there's also an increase probably every time a patch comes out because you want to immediately see, oh, what are the changes, how are they affecting the game.
Yeah, it's interesting learning the process. Like, Wings of Liberty beta, we didn't really even consider it a beta. It was StarCraft 2 as far as we were concerned. So it was, you know, you watched that because it was the update to Brood War, which is what we all came from. Or it was the update to Warcraft 3, etc. Like, the communities kind of melded that way. But with Heart of the Swarm, it has this, it has less novelty, but it also has, like, our expectation is for a balanced game. That's what people are fighting for, like, the highest skill. So if you... At the beginning of Heart of the Swarm, the numbers definitely peaked. People were getting 2 or 3 times the viewership. That was awesome. But it only lasted, I want to say, like maybe a month or 3 weeks or something like that. It was kind of short. And then after that, your viewership wouldn't dip, but it definitely did. I don't think it was noticeably higher.
All right. All right. Well, so before we move on, and we're going to kind of transition into Pro League through Heart of the Swarm. But there's one thing, you know, in the previous episodes when we've talked about Heart of the Swarm, we've made mention about how some of the later game units, you know, we talked specifically about how the Vipers come into play, how some of the, air toss, stuff will allow for, you know, more micro engaging battles. And Idra, I wanted to ask you, well, I mean, all of you guys, do you feel like that's up? You feel like it's still kind of upholding to that? Have any of the changes had a drastic impact on sort of that mentality as people are looking and starting to use these units more?
I think ZVT late game, it could. A combination of Vipers and Infestors, along with your base army of Ultraling, Baneling, or whatever it is, just having two very powerful spellcasters together, that's still functional against Terran, or at least I think it will be. But against Protoss, it's not nearly as much as it was before, just because Protoss is just, they're learning to feed back the Vipers, and it's almost not worth it to have that supply and cost in your army when you can just have Infestor, Ultraling, or Infestor and Anti-Air. And Protoss's air, they have the Oracle as a harass unit early on, but it doesn't have much functionality later. So it's really, it's best for Protoss to just kind of sit and turtle and get up to a really strong air army where they have to use the Templar spells under it. But overall, it's mostly just kind of an attack army. There's not a whole lot of subtlety to it. And then for Terran, Terran mech doesn't really work anymore. Vipers just are very, very good against it. And then Bio plays pretty much the same as it did early. It did in Wings of Liberty. You only really want to mix in Battle Hellions. Seem like they might have some effect now. They're very powerful, but overall, no. It doesn't feel like it's gotten
the mine, man.
Oh, the mine. Yeah, actually, the mine is one place that Terran players really have not taken advantage of their new shit yet. Like, the mine is going to be very, very good once Terrans learn how to use it. So yeah, I guess there are little things that add subtlety to every race, but overall, it's not quite as good as what I think me and Jeff were hoping for when we were talking about that early on.
Okay. You know, the reason I kind of make that segue is because as we go into Pro League, which has been really exciting, I think for a lot of people, really starting to get into it, appreciating the format, etc. But it also comes at, you know, a time when Heart of the Swarm has a chance to bring more exposure and attention to the game. Thus, exposure and attention to all the leagues. So, as we go into it, we've talked a little bit about Pro League on the show, and we kind of talked at some points about going, well, we all hope that it does really well. It'd be awesome to see a successful transition over from Brood War into StarCraft II. And the first question would be, as we go into this discussion, do you guys feel that this has been a successful transition into Muslim since you've been a little quiet? And you haven't ever been on the show talking about Pro League. What are your thoughts? Do you think that this has been a successful transition? And what do you think about Pro League overall?
Okay, Brood War was never my never my game. But even as a Warcraft 3 player, Brood War was a game that us Brood War guys looked upon and was like, wow. So like watching VODs of Brood War guys, like I know all the old school names like Isle of Uv, Reach, you name it, and watch these VODs of like cool moments happening and such. So for me, getting to watch like Pro League live and stuff, it's been cool. And just to kind of emphasize how cool it is, it's like the only season pass that I've ever bought. I love watching these guys that are mechanically beautiful play this game to like the best of their ability and stuff and play against each other. I love seeing team leagues go at it, like, because when you're playing for your team, it means so much more than just playing for yourself. Like, not only is your pride on the line, but like also this real deep gut feeling that you really don't want to lose your team, you don't want to let everybody down and stuff. And I've thoroughly enjoyed Pro League so far. It's pretty much the only kind of league that I follow, and there's multiple reasons for it. One, the games are amazing. Two, I love watching teams battle it out. I love seeing what strategies they're going to employ or which players are good in which matchups, like who they're going to send on next, especially in the all-kill format. And I've loved it. The only letdown has been the commentators thus far.
Okay. Idra?
I'm really happy with it just because it is Pro League. It's like all the Brood War legends. They're like the people I was looking up to as I started to get good at gaming. And just kind of the people I practiced under in Korea. So watching them is really, really cool. A lot of it's on pretty early. GSL is almost never on at a comfortably watchable time for the West Coast, whereas the first Pro League match is almost always like pretty comfortable for us to watch, so that in itself is nice. I tend to not really listen to commentators anyway, so I bypass the worst part of the show. So for me, it's just kind of fun. It's nice to watch really, like Ben said, really good, clean, mechanical play. That's the kind of thing I can really respect. And also, you can see a lot of progress in it. Like, there's a definite change in their play from even the first round of pure StarCraft II Pro League until now, much less the first round of the hybrid until now. And watching that process in itself is just interesting, seeing the way they figure things out, seeing how they figure things out differently than the ESF players did back at the start of StarCraft II. So for me, it's probably like, it's one of the only things I really watch anymore, given that I've switched mostly to HOTS. I don't really care about what foreigners are doing in Wings of Liberty anymore, but I watch that more for entertainment than anything. So I like it a lot.
It feels so personal, too. Like, a lot of things that tournaments miss out on, and I'll talk about, like, DreamHack and stuff, I never see, like, the players' faces up until the final of the tournament happening, and, like, this one, it zooms in on, like,
dude,
these really intense
moments. Fucking zoom, man. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. The zoom, people, I mean, it adds 1,000% to your StarCraft
production. It adds so much. Like, it makes it actually feel like a sport. It's not like, oh, these two dudes battling out, and you don't even get to see how they feel afterwards, but... And this one, like, you actually see them cry after they win or lose. You get to see, like,
head on table, all that shit, yeah.
Yeah, you get to see them, like, fist pumping and high fives going down and stuff. And it's actually, like, what I want to see. Like, gets me freaking hyped. Like, even if I'm not into either one of these teams, when I see one of them win or one of them lose, like, I kind of feel either heartbroken or, like, lots of joy going on inside me. And, yeah, it's bringing back a lot of excitement for me. It's no longer these two dudes sitting, like, pan face, just like kind of playing the games. It's everything I kind of want it to be. It's just a lot of fun.
And, you know, we've talked about that aspect a few times on the show and elsewhere, but it just bears repeating. For me, like a couple nights ago when Stefano was beating on CJ Hero, they zoomed in on him and CJ Hero was like nodding his head, smiling, kind of like a "you got me this time." But that adds so much to it. Like I'm gonna remember that now because I love that attitude from him where he's like, "I'm a fucking boss. You bested me this time, kid, but I'll be back for you." And that, like, you can create that story. Like, if you had good commentators, they would talk about that kind of stuff and build up that emotion. But the option is there, and I really hope, because Pro League's been doing that for 15 years, guys. Like, that's actually what they've always done. I hope we do away with the webcams in the booth, the tank cam, the ridiculousness of it. And I hope leagues 1,000% shamelessly steal that, because you know what? It makes everything better. It makes it more exciting. And if I'm an outside sponsor looking in, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for, to be like, oh, wow, this is an actual production. I don't know who that kid is. I don't really know what's happening. But when his mouth drops open because his army just blew up from a burrowed, you know, baneling or something like that, I know what that is. I can feel that. That's really cool. But, you know, we've talked about that enough. I think what Pro League does for me that makes me really happy is I want to use the word revitalize, because I really feel like GSL has its ups and downs. It's a fantastic league. And I really don't necessarily think Pro League is necessarily better than them. I just think they offer different things. I'm still really excited about the GSL show. I think they put on one of the best damn shows out there. They have the best commentating rotation in all the leagues, I think. So from that aspect, it's really fun. And I like that, at least for a period of time, and hopefully moving forward, I think they're still doing it. Well, they are, because the guys are in there. But I like the cross-mingling. I like the story of ESF guys going to Pro League, and I like the story of Pro League guys going to GSL and having that rivalry and having those battles. So for me, that's really exciting. And I'm not even, you know, we've talked about the commentating before, so I don't have anything to add to that. It's unfortunate, but that's something that I think everyone kind of commonly accepts. But for me, Pro League is that top tier StarCraft finally being assimilated and coming in. Now there's no excuses. This is the best of the best. We're not waiting on some guy who, like, well, for, you know, like, he's like, I'm waiting for Legacy of the Void, and then the world shall know. No, it's everybody right now. And I think with Pro League breaking through and doing that and kind of winning over more from Korea, I feel like StarCraft really finally has its best projection possible right now. So go up or down in the years to come, this is StarCraft. Whereas in the back, we would always hold off because we're like, well, there is that Brood War show they're dragging through the mud and, you know, like, still having us watch, but for right now, this is StarCraft.
Another thing we didn't even mention, oddly enough, is EGTL being there. Adds a ton of excitement. Like, you can see every night that EGTL plays. Yeah, they have double, triple the viewers of that. All the foreigners tune in. Everyone's super, super excited. We watch the matches. And
how mind-boggling do you think that is for these guys? I mean, keep in mind,
which side of it?
What's that?
Which side of it? Like, Korean viewership seeing it, or
well,
what?
I mean, let's just take a look at this, right? So Brood War, Kespa, Korea, you know, Pro League, it dominates for so many years. It is the bee's knees. It's the shit, right? As far as foreign gaming is concerned, they're like, what's foreign gaming? Ha, 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 ha. And they're, you know, they're having a good old time. In comes the new game. They retire Brood War. And suddenly, you know, I'm sure they can see shrinkage, and they have over time, but suddenly they're seeing an explosion when there are this international team and suddenly this international interest all around. And there's no doubt the international interest blankets the entire league. But as you mentioned, Idra, it's almost double, sometimes triple the numbers when the Western teams are playing. So how mind-blowing do you think that is for them, considering that it is like a 180 as to what they're used to?
And I would say that would be where my criticism for Pro League comes from mostly. I think they're very much so fixated on a Korean audience, which is understandable. It definitely is what their goal is, and that's where they've made their money and where they've been. But they have more to learn, I feel like, from GSL, where GSL definitely aimed towards the Korean audience but still roped in the foreigners and did a fantastic job of that. We get our foreigner commentators on camera. You know, they do shows with them. They integrated them into their production. Whereas in Pro League, say what you want about the commentators, not having them on camera, I feel like that handicaps their potential as well. And really, it affects the overall show of Pro League. So I hope that they continue to grow and see that. They've posted around the internet saying we do care about the foreigner audience, and they, you know, are working on it and taking advice and all that stuff. So they're not closed off to the idea, but I think they have room to grow there for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as that was the other thing. So I never got to see it. I'm hoping one of you guys caught it live. I'm sure Stefano's face was priceless. But the good luck, have fun. So there was a stop down. Can someone, because this is one thing, I just saw a couple of Reddit threads, but I never saw the actual match. Can someone give me the play-by-play here?
Well, Stefano's like, he obviously makes really funny choices that can be really dumb, like taking a picture of himself holding a blade in an airplane. But then he can do stuff that's really innocent, and part of what makes Stefano kind of magical and funny, the look on his face is Stefano. They like came in, and at first he's like, you know, he takes his headset off, and he's like, what, you know, what's going on? And they explain to him, and you can see on his face where he goes, like, he's like, what?
Really?
He's like, really? Like,
really?
Okay. Just not concerned at all. Like, another guy would be like, what did I do? Everyone's watching. You know, like, oh my god. But for Stefano, he was like, really? That's one of your rules? Okay. That's really stupid. You know, in his head, he's like, that's fucking stupid. But then he played on, and I loved that they showed Hero 2, and Hero's getting the biggest kick out of it as well. He's like, oh my god,
I gotta see this.
It's good.
Okay, all right.
I'm really glad they didn't disqualify him for that, though.
It's right at the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of the match, yeah. He just kind of walks into the booth, types GL, have fun, and then they pause it. And then, luckily, Hero from CJ enters, also types, like, have fun or whatever.
Right. Okay. Let's see if I can...
It was funny. I mean, a lot of people were like, I remember back in the day, I complained about that rule, too, because one of the worst ones ever was, you're either supposed to type two P's or three P's, but someone typed one less or too many. It was disqualified from that game, and it cost, like, him and his team. You know, it was just ridiculous shit.
The best part was it was while his monitor was off. Like, that was why he needed a pause, and he typed too many letters while he couldn't even see them, and so they DQ'd him.
Yeah, that in that situation, I think I would set fire to buildings and, like, really go crazy. Yeah. But
oh my
the
God.
Reason
I know
it's this is they don't want extra chatter. They don't want somebody to be, like, you know, they don't want the drama of someone saying, like, you know, STFU or, like, LOL, or not that I don't think that's a huge concern, but they just want to keep it crisp, so they're pretty staunch about it. But I'm glad, like I think as Ben said, that they didn't actually disqualify Stefano. That would have been ridiculous.
What? Oh, here it comes. Stefano.
Look at Hero. He starts cracking up here in a second. He's like, hell, he's like, stupid foreigner.
Oh, that's really funny. That is really funny. He is. You can see that smile on his face. Like, well, wait a second. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. All right. I mean, like, fair enough, right? I don't know that I can necessarily say, sons of bitches fucking fuck their tradition.
Live and learn, man.
Live and learn. Yeah, Stefano, at least he took it. It's like, I could get away with a knife, but not a GLHF.
I like when he laughs beside himself, though, like right there, just like.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, he may have thrown Hero off a little bit there. Who knows?
That was a strategy, man.
Who knows? That's pretty funny, his little smirks. All right, any final comments as Pro League as we continue on? Any final thoughts?
Just if people didn't know, it's $5. Like Greg said, the hours are pretty good. The Friday Saturday show is at a decent hour. The Monday Sunday night or Monday, I can't remember which two nights it is, but that one's the later one. But just check it out; it's really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, the $5 was surprising. I think the $5 gets you like all five rounds too. So it's like, it's actually just a really good deal. Like, it's well worth it for $5.
Some are saying yes, some are saying no, but I mean, yeah.
Because I only paid $5 and I've already been able to watch both this round and the last round. So it seems weird to arbitrarily cut it off after like two or something.
Sure. Sure. All right. Let's talk about, I had a previously on. I forgot to mention that, both you guys were at CES, Course and Control. We were casting the HyperX 10-year anniversary finals in which, Jay Dong did win. And, Idri, you were doing some CES tournament stuff with Rotterdam. I just got to know how that went because we were kind of laughing to ourselves like, man, Rotterdam, he doesn't know what he's getting himself into. Like, these trade shows are a totally different thing. It's so.
Like, I did PAX before, but at PAX, it was me and Bryce and Jeff, and I wasn't even officially part of the booth. I was just there for ESWC and then helping out in my free time. But there, everyone just kind of sits around and jokes around. Part of it helped. We had Jeff leading, and so he's kind of funny, and he can just, like, make light of the terrible situations.
Sure.
But there also, they didn't have the survive 20-minute rule. It was just, like, play the pros and do handicaps, and we'll hand out stuff subjectively.
Right.
But it didn't win.
Oh, no. Oh, it was going to be the
20
best.
Real minutes.
There he is.
No. Oh, I had a pause for me. Guess. Okay.
You're back.
So I heard at InWin you had 20 minutes.
At InWin, you got to survive. Originally, it was you survive 20 minutes and you get a prize. If you beat me, you get a better prize. And so on the first day, we had 20 real minutes, which was quite a bit of time. So I could just mess around and like actually do fun stuff and still be able to beat them comfortably. And the next day, we move it to 20 real game minutes, which is still enough to like have fun with. So we're doing, okay, I'm doing like joke strategies unless their masters are better and playing off races and stuff. But then for the last 2 days, we move it down to 15 in-game minutes, which is short enough that I have to play seriously against anyone as long as they like know how to play the game. And against Terry and I have to go 2-base Muta every single game because otherwise they just float their buildings and I can't kill them and stuff like that.
Right.
So the game's just become horrendously fucking awful. And it's just like, and especially towards the end of the last day, people are figuring out what works. There's, like, making a ton of cannons or just turtling up on one base. Because you only have to survive to, like, 12 or 13 and then float your buildings. I can actually kill you in time. And so they just became the worst games imaginable. Luckily, I didn't lose any matches or they would have had to give away a $400 case. But I did have, I think, 3 people survive 15 in-game minutes. Nice. I don't know. The in-wing guys were absolutely great. I loved hanging out with them and working at the booth. They treated us really well. And, I mean, I got a free trip to Vegas out of it, so I'm not complaining. But,
Rotterdam?
Yeah.
He loved it, didn't he?
Yeah, he actually had to stand up and talk about all the awful games, so I think he actually had it worse than me. At least I got to sit there and just make mutas. So I feel pretty bad for Kevin, too. But yeah, I don't know. They need to do it more like Kingston does at PAX and just have it all be subjective and much more fun and lighthearted and let us choose when to give out prizes or something like that. Because that was just
how many people
terrible.
Because CES, for those that don't know, it's a consumer electronics show. It is not a PAX. It is not an E3. In fact, gaming companies are very, very much limited. It's mostly you have to think like technology, electronics, right? A lot of like 8K TVs and, you know, shit that waterproofs
tablets.
Like your arms and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, all sorts of wacky shit. So did you have a lot of, I mean, were there enough gamers like, yeah, I'm next. I'm coming up.
Yeah, I played 85 or 90 games throughout the weekend. And whenever we had a game going, we had at least 4 or 5 people standing there watching. And some of the games that were visibly entertaining to people who didn't know what was going on. Like there was exciting shit happening on the screen. Then we would actually get a pretty decent crowd going. I was impressed. I thought we would have a lot of downtime. I thought we would just like sit around and like maybe walk around the show or have 2-hour-long lunch breaks or something. But no, we had constant activity at the booth. Occasional downtime, but more than enough. Like, this is the second year in a row that InWin's done the same thing, so right. They clearly get enough traffic to be happy with it and bring it back. Yes. So it went surprisingly well.
And we did the 10-year anniversary tournament, which is a good way to kick off 2013. Jay Dong won his first international tournament. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I had fun.
Hopefully it's kind of a dream come true meeting Jay Dong. He's for those of you that will maybe attend an event that he's at and get to meet him, make the time to do it, because he's actually like a legit professional superstar. Like, he actually engages his fans. He makes time to take pictures. And that guy is actually the funniest guy on the team, which I was a little bit insecure about, because it's like, you're not supposed to be this good at everything you do, but he wears pants better than most of us. He plays StarCraft better than absolutely every one of us, and he's fucking hilarious, man. Like, I walked up to him and I very earnestly said, I said in my Konglish, I was like, we're going to make you a gag, man. We'll make you more funny. And he looked at me, gave it a pause, and in the most like insanely adorable, sincere way said, well, I certainly hope so. And then, like, it was just too much. It was like in a mix of adorableness and hilarity, and I just walked away. Like, I was like, this guy's actually better than all of us at everything. So it was amazing.
Nice. Well, thank you to Kingston, and HyperX is also a sponsor of Inside the Game. It was great to have that, and got to hang out with Ghosty User, who I guess I didn't really have this on the docket, but dude, Ghosty User is such a fucking great guy, but I can't believe how much he got lit up over that MVP shit online. Like, I was really kind of disappointed. It's one of those things. Oh, like
Patch Zerg and all that.
Patch Zerg. Ghosty is a patch.
Surely after that it was televised that he beat MVP 3-0 as well, who's the most accomplished Terran in the world. So he got a lot of hate for that. And the bottom line is, right now Zergs are getting a lot of hate in general. Like, any new Zerg with any kind of new success, they're called patch Zerg.
Right.
And their wins are discredited.
You know, it's just bullshit. Anyway, let's talk about free agents. Speaking of Ghost User, who then was a free agent, went to Millennium, because we just heard, in fact, like Minigun left Complexity. Yep. The MAGA has just gone. Parting has left, and then I think is now picked up by Korean team. There's been quite a few going on. Do you think that this has a lot to do with 2013 coming up, or?
I think it's absolutely it's the new times. Like, the unending growth of 2010 into 11 was when teams that may or may not invest in StarCraft II, had it answered for them, they would be silly not to grab some attention. But in 2013, teams are seeing options now. You can invest in LoL, Dota, and StarCraft II and see returns. But then the teams also that didn't get their payoff in StarCraft II are starting to trim the fat. And I think it's unfortunate, but it's also a good thing. But then also, let's keep in mind, this is January. So the shifting of some of these players is purely contractual, and it's not actually the sky falling. It's just like, that actually happens every year. The contract usually runs through December. And if they don't sign, January is when you hear about them becoming either a free agent or signing with somebody else. So that's what a lot of that is. But some teams did close. We've seen, you know, teams backtracking, Complexity closing down their house in Houston. An entire, you know, TSL actually collapsing. But that one's a little bit interesting. I hope a lot of people know what was going on there. Like,
do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Dirty stuff. Well, it's been minorly publicized. This is not me whistleblowing. People do know this, but some of those guys were just like deals would come in that was meant for the players. They're like personal sponsorships, and it wouldn't be shared with the player. The coach would actually pocket it, and he later would come out and say that he was doing that because he wasn't able to get any money into the team, so he needed to keep it afloat. So whether you agree with that decision or not, the bottom line is that there's fairly unethical things going on. They couldn't get new sponsorships, so it did end up closing. And there was a little bit of finger-pointing afterwards where the coach said it's the players. The players said it was the coach. He went back and forth. It was pretty ugly. But it's a little bit different than, you know, scaling back in esports. It was more just kind of internal struggle.
Yeah, TSL has been, like, notoriously shady. The buzz around it kind of died down a bit, but back when Puma joined us, JYP joined us, they had other players just leave to other teams. I forget names at this point. But, you know, there's always been a lot of buzz around them about how Coach Lee is kind of dirty, about how he sells out his players, doesn't treat them very well. Just a lot of problems with that team. So no one should really be surprised that they're kind of out.
We might have actually lost them that time. Stand by. As January 3rd, 2013 is when that happened. We lost them. So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, get our folks back on the line, and when we return inside the game, we'll continue. Don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, guys, we're back. Sorry about that. Sometimes them interwebs, them tubes and stuff, they get all messed up, and there we go. So we're back. We were amidst talking about free agents, and I believe Idra was making the final comment. Do you know where you left off before you realized that the world had nearly ended?
I was just kind of pointing out that, like, some of the teams going under, that just happens. It's actually a sign of a healthy industry. There's competition pushing them out. There's, like, other teams doing better than them. The influx of all the Kespa players and the Kespa teams. they're raising the bar. TSL is notoriously dirty, notoriously shady. They don't make their players happy. Those players are good enough to find home somewhere else. Same with Slayers, kind of. It sucks to call Boxer's organization shady, but they obviously weren't making their players happy. And those players have now found a new home, and a home that hopefully treats them better. So that's just is actually positive for the community, as long as those players can continue to find new homes. If you have players, like good, qualified, tournament-level players, sitting there without teams while they are looking for teams for months and months on end, then it becomes a problem. But, like, parting, moving from Starfield to SK, that's a good thing. That's supposed to be happening. That gives players options, gives players power over the teams.
It's a good point.
And allows players to look out for their own rights. It's a sign of an active, healthy industry.
How about Major has recently joined Team 8,
mm-hmm.
That being another very rare foreign pickup by a Korean team. With thoughts on Demuslim, you look like you have something to say about that.
I have nothing to say apart from I'm very happy for Juan. He's gone through his ups and downs with the community, be it for like smurfing, pretending he's a lady and entering a tournament and stuff. Yeah, he's had his ups and downs, but he's a nice guy, and he's genuinely very talented, and his dream has always been, like, going to Korea. So I'm just very happy for him, and, yeah, he deserves it.
Yeah, he's, like, a pretty good friend of mine. For all of the, like, the problems and the funny shit, he's just, like, a misguided little kid who's really, really talented and also pretty smart and extremely hardworking. And it's been his dream to go to Korea and particularly to be on a KESPA team forever. So I'm, nothing but happy for him.
Yeah, nothing to add.
And he is genuinely capable of competing with those players, like especially given the practice time in a KESPA house. He's not just like a waste of space over there or a gimmick or something. Yeah. He can play with them.
Nice. What were you going to say, Jeff?
Just that there's not really much to add. I like that he actually, for people that don't know behind the scenes, he didn't like petition them and show like here's tournaments I did well at. He actually physically tried out for these games. Like he played against their team. He then had I guess he was abroad, so he wasn't able to go to their house to do it. Like which is the truest way to do it. But I just like that he earned that spot. Like, it was his dream. He fought for it. He earned it. If there's anyone that's even remotely like angry or upset or not happy for him, then you got other issues.
You guys have talked before about the tryouts. You've told some old stories about the Brood War tryouts and how they'd have you come into the channel and play a bunch of games. Are you implying that it literally was like that?
Yeah, it was. I know how he did. I'm not sure if we're supposed to say, so I won't. But they had him play online, playing from North America and Korea, so it was actually even worse than playing from the house because he had latency.
Wow. He's from Mexico, too.
But he practices on Korea all the time, so he's used to that. But yeah, in latency, they just had him play against at least two, maybe some more of their players, and he lost a match and won a match at least, and that was good enough for them to let him come over and give him a chance on the team.
It's pretty fucking badass, actually. That's a cool story. Any other like free agent we haven't talked about? This can of course segue into our next topic, but I want to give an opportunity since we kind of abruptly had an internet stoppage there. Anything else? Anyone who you think might come go?
Squirtle's an interesting story.
Oh right, right.
People mentally just still kind of count him out from the big superstars, but actually, he was silently one of the hardest hitters for StarTail, which is a very accomplished team. Parting to SK is really, really scary. Or not SK, but SK T1. Anyways, him and Rain partnering up is an amazing 1-2 punch, and it's not like they don't have a couple other guys that are pretty good.
Yeah.
Obviously not on that level, but those two guys together is really, really scary. And then, one of the topics that's still interesting to me is a player of the caliber of Naniwa. There was a couple like announcements that he was going to go to Dignitas, but then Odie's house caught on fire, so for some reason that meant that they're now not recruiting him. And then it was announced, kind of, I guess, like it, not announced, but rumored a couple weeks ago that he was going to announce his team, and everyone was saying Western Wolves, but then nothing really, nothing came up, and it's weird to me that Naniwa would be teamless this long.
Well, Slasher tweeted that there was multiple teams bidding for him, right?
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know. For someone as notoriously hard to work with as him, I don't find it surprising, especially given like he knows, or if anything, exaggerates his own value. So he's going to be fighting for every dollar he can get. To me, the bigger surprises are that a lot of the big TSL guys are still on the market, like Symbol and Hyun in particular.
Hyun, yeah, that's weird.
I'm sure they're just like looking around, finding their best option, because there are teams that want them. There are teams who will play them enough for them to join, and I'm sure they're just looking at their options.
Paul, too, right? Hasn't found a team yet?
Yeah, but he's moving to the U.S., so I imagine his situation's a bit more complicated.
Okay.
Like, Hyun was, disgusting, though. Absolutely disgusting.
He was a GSL. He's a reigning GSL finalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't know, so this is pure speculation, so take it for what it is. But I feel like he wouldn't be an expensive sign to a team. I don't think this is a guy that would ask for $2,500 or $3,000. I think he'd be relatively inexpensive, and he would produce frickin' results. So it's kind of weird to me that the second he went out, he wasn't swooped up by somebody that needs an amazing good Zerg.
He's kind of IPL's golden child because of the Fight Club run.
Yeah,
maybe that's maybe IPL is trying to work out a deal with him or something. I don't know. There could be extenuating circumstances, but you're right. It's very surprising that he stayed on the market this long.
And yeah. I mean, eventually, if there are more people on the market, it can become tougher, and suddenly things scale a little bit, because if someone's going to pay a high amount for, or has to, for a contract for X player, you know, it makes it tougher on the guys that are sixth, seventh, and eighth in line.
And on the other end, you know, if Hyun's asking for 3K, but you can get Symbol for 2K, is Hyun really worth another 1,000?
Right.
Might as well just go take Symbol, and then that drives Hyun's asking price down.
And that's kind of crazy that you can have a reverse bidding war in such a fashion.
There's so many, though, to your point. You're right. It's a little bit scary. Like, when Damaga left his team, if this was a year ago, there's no question about it. In my opinion, he's signed within 5 days. I still think that's the case because of his stream and his actual ability to win tournaments. Like, he's an amazing signee, so there's no question about it, especially in Eastern Europe, where they're very loyal that way. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is, this is a scarier open market to go into, I feel. As a player, it's pretty cool if you're a team guy, because I do think those prices get driven down just because of the options you have.
Well, and I mean, new teams are popping up. I mean, Axiom has most certainly been making a splash, now going to GSTL, but opened up the opportunity for some additional players, Acer as well. I mean, kind of one of the biggest moves, 2012, that went under the radar a little bit, but of course MMA and them sort of stacking it. But the options are most certainly out there, which is interesting that a dying game continues to have places that people can go and play, but it's happening. So that sort of takes us a segue into something. You know, we have a pretty open format, at least amongst the hosts and inside the game, where if someone says, hey, I'd really like to talk about this, then we give them the opportunity to. In this case, I think that there was actually some discussion, and I wasn't privy to all of it, between Idra, InControl, and Slasher, that kind of amounted to esports, journalism, and normal sports. Right. And Jeff, you had come to me and said, hey, I'd really like to talk with this. Of course, not with the intention of just stirring up drama, but actually discussing it, and why one side might think that it's great that we are mimicking sports already, and why another audience is saying we're not there yet, so we have to take liberties when it comes to journalism. So do you want to kick it off?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let me set this up, because obviously Slasher's not on the show, and he will be named because he is the journalist right now. There's a few other people that do this kind of thing, and he's the guy. So just know, please, to the audience, he's a personal friend of pretty much everyone here. I do actually respect him, and I'm going to do the best job I possibly can to try and represent his perspective and his side as I see it, but I'm not going to be able to do it verbatim. So if you have something to add, tweet at us, post in our thread. It's on Team Liquid as well, but I'm going to try and represent both sides. So for Slasher, he's a journalist that works for GameSpot. He's paid to go to events and to report on them. His job is to be online researching, as I understand it, by the way. I'm not actually his boss, so the definition of his job is not for me to control. But his job is informing people on esports and telling them what the goings and comings and that kind of a thing. So lately, one of the things that's been happening is that when he talks, because he talks to everyone, he's connected to everybody, when he receives news that a player is going to be transferring teams, traded, or something like that, and I can actually see that Slash is in the chat, so if he wants to come on, that's something I'm fine with as well. I know that our record is like 0-2 for people coming on, and that's turning out well, but I promise not to yell
at
him.
He's a bit better than the other people we've brought on, too.
All right. So. Well, let me finish, Slasher, and if you don't come on, you can at least let me know how close to Mark
I'm glad we can laugh about that, guys.
Yeah. Anyways, so Slasher, he'll hear these things, and he's been adamant about this, and I don't think anyone's calling him a liar, but if it's on the record, if someone on the record tells him, I know this player's going to this team, or this player's being cut, or so on and so forth, but the highly contested one, as far as our opinions are concerned, is the one where he announces on behalf of other teams their players moving or being signed. He'll publicize that. He'll tweet it. He'll make a thread, and he'll put it on GameSpot, and then he'll make a thread that links to that article on your and actually, Alex is Mr. Garfield's offering to come on as well, so we can have this debate. It's great. If you want to talk to him, wait in the background.
Sure.
But so he'll actually tweet that, and he'll break the news is the thing. So it'll come out. That, you know, like Jadong is rumored to be going to EG. It should happen this week. And he'll hear that from a league that has Jadong's name added to a roster, but that was asked to kept secret. He'll hear it from a player from the team itself. He'll hear it from a manager or, like, he has ups and downs in terms of where he hears it from. But he gets that information, and it'll be on the record. He'll say, hey, can I say this? And that person will say, yes, you can, but leave my name out of it. Okay, so that's what happens. And his argument on why that's okay is because it's his job. He says that he's supposed to report the news. When he hears news and it's official, he is obligated to put that out there. He's also said that you get better, you know, you'll get good viewership on GameSpot, and that's what he does.
Did we lose him?
We lost
viewership
Jeff.
On GameSpot, and that's what. He does. Well, let me know when I'm back.
Okay, am I back?
Okay, actually, pause at times. That's good. So, So that's that, okay? And there's people that believe that. They say it's very hard to be a journalist in esports. If you compare it to sports, there's player speculation going on all the time. That's the precedent. That's where we exist. So again, if you think I'm leaving something out or trying to skew that, please let me know, because I'm really not. That's actually what I understand. Now, the reason why this is a really big discussion and why Alex Garfield is asking to come on, why I've offered Slash to come on, and why people have talked about this, it's a very heated Twitter debate, is because... And this is now going into my opinion, so if you disagree with it, you can feel free to do that, but this is my opinion. We're not sports. When Alex Rodriguez is announced to go to the Yankees and a reporter breaks that news, the Yankees don't throw up their arms and go, we were really counting on the viewership on our website that we worked on to get some ad rev out of that and build excitement for our organization that otherwise wouldn't get attention. That doesn't happen in sports. They say, I don't give a fuck. We signed him for $155 million or whatever the hell it was. It was a lot of money. And, you know, people are going to talk about it no matter what. It's public information. But in esports, and it's less so for EG, by the way, guys. So I can tell you on behalf of a few of these organizations that have had this spoiled, it doesn't come from their manager. It doesn't come from their owner. They're very upset about that. It comes from some other area of their organization where that information gets leaked. And the people working on the announcement video, the people that were working on capitalizing on that and making it exciting for their organization to draw attention to them, it gets cut into, it gets pushed back, and it gets stymied overall. I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that none of the organizations that had that information leaked were like, oh, wow, we actually it helped us. It grew our excitement for that. All of them will tell you in esports that it was not good. So that's why... It's a very difficult situation because Slasher is doing his job, but there's an ethic to it within our realm where you go to him and you say, if you could work alongside us and we could announce at the same time and you can get your viewership on your website, that's a different audience, but then we could also have our excitement and our announcement that drives attention towards our labels. That's where that's a little bit different.
I want to ask the obvious question, right? So playing devil's advocate in the most extreme way, the Jadong announcement. A lot of people had an idea. I believe that this was one of Slasher's breaking news tweets, etc. Assuming that there's no historical data that says, well, when we've had an unleaked engagement, we've had this much, and then when we've had a leaked engagement, we've seen a noticeable drop in 15%. But how many people do you actually think wouldn't watch a video? Or wouldn't go to a web page just because they're like, you know, Jadong joins EG. I kind of heard about that, right. You know, 2 weeks ago. I'm going to skip that one.
As far as I'm concerned, it's the projection. When it comes out of the blue or relatively out of the blue and it's really exciting, that video gets pushed further into the internet and reaches people that otherwise never would have reached it because the excitement carries it that far. When you actually cut into the excitement itself, the video will still be watched by everyone relevant to the news. Everyone that wants to know about JDong, is they're not going to be like, well, I read 15 sentences on GameSpot. I don't need to see that video. They're still going to see that video. But the ability for that to go viral and be exciting, that's where it actually gets cut into. And I see a lot of people talk. The other argument I forgot to mention, too, is they're bringing up like, well, that's, you know, that's not Slash's problem. That's the way it works, and that's his job. And I absolutely 1,000% agree with you guys. It really comes down to this. He's doing his job. We're supposed to be doing our job where that information doesn't get to him, and we get to create that excitement by keeping it tight-lipped. So organizations try to do that the best they can. The question, the way this gets looked at, though, is if you're just completely fine with that kind of reporting, like he gets that information from IPL who had JDong's name change, and then he reports on behalf of EG from his source at IPL, and you guys are just like, well, EG should have done a better job of, like, adding his name secretly or handing out non-disclosure agreements or something like that. They should have done that. Then I think you're a little bit unrealistic, because as far as I'm concerned, Slasher should have taken that information that he knows is the property of EG. And that's where a lot of people are going
to
lose me.
I have to lose you right there, because, that's like, fine. then it comes back to, like, you know, well, hey, NDA across the board, you know, there has to be some sort of a punishment for that. And it does beg the question, again, playing devil's advocate, is that just mean that you have to protect your own information and information flow better? Because there's no doubt about it. Like, esports is a small family at the highest level. Like, I mean, people will talk. I understand how information gets out there. But I don't know what you can do about it.
And those steps are being taken. I will tell you that. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing, is that when a journalist doesn't work with the organization, and this is, again, this is where people are going to get lost, because they're like, well, now he's just a PR guy. That's not what's being said. But I don't think you become a PR guy because you don't bust the news on somebody else beforehand in this industry. I don't think that's how it works. He doesn't have to be partial to our news. He could report and say, this is a terrible move. They signed him for too much, and it came at the wrong time. That's his opinion. That's his article. He can do that. But to announce a player on behalf of another organization, it's legal. It's fine. That's not what's being questioned. What's being questioned is, should he do that for the betterment of esports? And a lot of people are going to say, yes, absolutely, because they want the news as it comes out from good journalists, and that's exactly what Slasher is. And then other people are going to say, you're actually killing excitement that otherwise would project our game further, and it's bad. And that's where I think Alex and Slasher should start talking, because as far as I'm concerned, they're the ones that are better informed.
We're kind of about ready to make that happen. Let's hear from the Muslim and Idra as far as they're concerned. Idra, I know you got involved in the conversation. The Muslim, I'd love to hear if, like, frankly, you care.
I mean, Slasher's a good pal. Greg and Jeff are really good pals. And when I see this happening, I don't have a hell of a lot to say, but it feels like he's trying to steal the spotlight from these guys that are going to have the spotlight sooner. And I mean, he can help them out once they do give out the spotlight, but snatching it up before it's actually meant to be had kind of gives the rest of it like a fizzle effect. Like, it doesn't really have that big kapam feeling, and that's kind of annoying. And I feel if you are a reporter, and a good one at that, you've got a lot of responsibility in your hands to kind of keep a lot of information back, right? And I mean, I'm not the best at keeping secrets and stuff, and that's why I don't do that kind of thing, but I think that's a pretty big part of it too, just being able to keep the secret until it is actually released, so you don't steal any spotlight, but just you add to it. Like, that way you're just helping everybody out, you know, you're not just kind of divulging information before it's really wanting to divulge. I don't see that really helping anybody.
Yeah, that kind of leads into the arguments I was making when this all happened. To me, a journalist, a productive journalist, his responsibility is to take released information and spread it to different audiences, which Slasher's in a particularly good position to do with his job at GameSpot, which reaches more gaming audiences than just esports. So he's in a great position to take an EG announcement and then push that onto them, push that onto other people who wouldn't normally see it. Instead, by making that early announcement, he's just kind of like anyone who's not a big esports fan, like Jeff said, anyone who's actually part of the industry and is interested in the news will then see an announcement video or see whatever hype there is. But someone who just saw a tweet about it and was like, oh, cool, now JDong is on EG, they're not going to go back again and be like, oh, cool, he's on EG and there's a video now. They're just going to be like, oh, yeah, I already saw that.
Does Plus, this Oh, go ahead. Finish your point, and then I'll ask a question.
It was actually two-part. Like I said, journalists can either do that, or they should be breaking news that is being hidden. Like, since we already brought him up, like, if someone could have looked into what was going on in TSL and publicized that. But the problem with this is headlines that are going to be public in a few days. So he's not actually giving anything to the community by releasing them early. And in fact, he's taking away by taking away the excitement that comes with the really well-prepared, particularly with an organization like EG. Like, we're well-known for our videos. We have full-time employees who do nothing but make those videos and try to generate that excitement and that interest around the announcements that we make. We put a lot of effort into that. That gives us revenue, and it builds excitement for esports and for the fans, and just makes this whole thing a better product. But by tweeting an article that's a few paragraphs saying he's going to join, these might be the terms if he even has that information, there's really no excitement in that. It is just the news, and it's the news that's going to get out of there anyway. He's not benefiting anyone except for GameSpot, and he can do that for them anyway after the announcement comes out by writing a really good article about it, by pushing forward more information, and by bringing that to his audience as well as the audience that EG's reaching. Plus, then he has more stuff to put into his article. He can link to the video. He can link to our article. He can link to everything that we do around it and then put his own spin on.
I want to tell a story about Slasher before I bring him on. And you know, before I tell the story, I also want people to think about this. You know, while it may not have as large of an impact on a player like Jadong, you know, because people know Jadong, there's excitement around him anyway that he wants to go in. If you think about the impact it had on someone like Snoot, where the surprise of that announcement truly would be a fucking surprise, but not when I read about it on Twitter a day before it happened. And, I mean, like, the magnitude of it certainly changes based on the situation, but I would imagine that it becomes even worse there. But Slasher once asked me, like, advice, and he just said, hey, I basically have this information. What do you think I should do with it? And I said, frankly, I think you should get interviews out of it. And he was like, but don't you think it would just be better to break it? And I'm like, no, don't you think it'd be better to be able to say I was the first guy to interview this player? And so essentially, I gave the advice to Slasher that he should take this information, share it with the people that obviously it would affect, request the first interview, and then not release the information. Now, he's taken my advice a couple of times, but for the most part, he never listens to me. So, with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and bring him on right now, and then we'll likely bring on Alex. But let's give Rod an opportunity here.
Absolutely.
If you've just joined us, the discussion is kind of journalism, esports, and regular sports. How some of the practices of esports are sort of being used. Some of the practice of regular sports are being used. We now have Slasher on. Hello, Slasher. Hello?
Hello.
Okay.
How you doing?
Yeah, doing good. Okay. Can you guys hear him okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Slasher, have you been listening in?
I have been listening in. I've read all the tweets over the past 5 days or so. It's been terrific. I've enjoyed all of it.
Okay. Well, based off of what's been said tonight, and obviously Jeff did start this with the intention of, you know, let's have the discussion about this, right? I mean, Twitter's 140 characters. Now it's the time for us to use big words and be intelligent about this. Would you have any responses to anything you've heard tonight, or would you like to just kind of address from your perspective immediately?
Well, there's like a few different things, so you may have to point me and help me get in a different direction, because there's a few different ways to look at it.
All right, well, let's just start.
How to do it, and how to do it, et cetera. Yeah,
Okay. I think we start with kind of what In Control was talking about, and that is the anti-hype that one can build with information that comes out when it's obvious the intention of an announcement or a release is to build more hype and to advance things further. What is your perception on that?
All right, so first and foremost, every post that I make on GameSpot, along with other journalists on my site, and pretty much every editor journalist you're going to find for every site, is always based upon whatever preference they have, whatever they would like to do, also what kind of efforts they have in terms of, like, you know, MMOs or multiplayer games, single player games or whatever, if you do Siren. And it's never going to be to take whatever the Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft gives them, which on a daily basis is everything from Xbox Live to PSN to different games to different services to who knows what, and post it on the site, as there really is ever any of stuff about that, aside from big announcements, like, you know, the new Xbox, the new Kinect, or whatever. And it's always at the discretion of the journalist. So
No, hold on. It's not at the discretion of the journalist. They put embargoes on that shit all the time.
Yes, that is true. There are several embargoes for some stories that developers put out.
No, Slasher.
Wait, listen, Moody. I have never once received an embargo for an esports story from any major organization.
Okay, all right.
The teams, the leagues, and, you know, any other events. So if you want to see how disorganized everyone would be.
All right, hold on. If
for something to be released.
If you had information
in the stream
and someone said, Slasher, the embargo on this information is January 21st. That's when you are allowed to talk about this, right? Because the point of an embargo is that I, as a journalist, can get this game, maybe play it, write an article on it, fact check, do all this, so that when the 21st comes, fucking boom, I've got, like, a perfect article coming out. So just with this being said, if teams and organizations, they started coming to you and said, we're going to give you this information so you can write a proper article, but it's embargoed until the 21st. Do you comply?
Yeah, I would consider the embargoes.
You would consider the embargoes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that is what all the gaming journalists do for some releases that have to be that way. Now, you can ignore the embargoes and have anything to do with them. I have never actually received one embargo for anything in the esports industry, but it would, yeah, I would consider it.
Okay,
all right. Wouldn't you say, too, like, with your sources, like, let's, I guess we're using the JDon as an example, but it really across the board, when you break that news, you're not talking to John Bain or Alex Garfield and getting that information from them, the people that would actually hand off an embargo to you. You're talking to, I'm guessing your sources would be lower people, either players or someone around the organization, right? Or another league or something like that.
Well, I mean, sources can be anything and anyone, but
I guess my point is the people that would actually give you an embargo are not the people you're breaking the news on, right?
Embargoed stories are an issue themselves of taking information from a developer, a publisher, a major organization, team, whatever, waiting on that until they want you to release it, and then releasing it. And if you don't comply with the embargo, then you get no assets, you get no help from the publisher, developer, pushing marketing quotes on boxes or magazines, you don't get
right.
So you do have to play, the media has to play that game with the big developers and publishers for all the major games. And that has gotten some outlets in trouble, and then some work with it, some don't, some try to say screw it and we'll just do it, and whatever's going to happen to us from them is going to happen. And both approaches can be done. So I'm okay with the embargo, but there is no embargo. So none of this exists right now.
I understand that.
We are now going to the assumption there are no embargoes because there aren't any, because none of this information beforehand agreement with the media thing exists at all. You know, none of them have tried to do it. So,
like Jeff said, that's because you're not going to the people who would want to embargo. You're getting it from different sources. You're not getting it from the upper management of the teams you're breaking it on.
But the embargoes are created by the developers and the publishers, and they go with all of the media together, like all of the media from all the different sites get like a packet of what to do and see if to sign anything and everything. That's the responsibility of the organizations to get that.
That's correct.
Not me to go to them to make it for them for me.
You're right, Slasher.
If Alex got wind that you were going to leak the information about JDon or something like that and asked you to not put it out there, would you then not do it?
All right, so we have to be no fluff here, right? All right, great example then, because on your team, Thursday was signing with EG, and of course that was something that I knew about beforehand. Instead of releasing information on it, I did an interview with Thursday, which went really well, and he and it was good, and it was good.
And yeah, where's the butt with that, though? Like, why break that mold?
Yeah. Because I really am enjoying the free... You just spent a whole bunch of time talking about free agent markets, and you even used some of my information in there without a blink of an eye while you're discussing it. And I love that. And I think the free agency, you can see with how popular the posts are for all the team leaving and joining throughout all the subreddits, not just StarCraft.
What information did we use that was yours?
I mean, you even talk about, like, Naniwa, Western Wolves, which is not happening anymore, by the way. And we're not actually not sure. Not a whole lot of teams want Naniwa. All right? No, they do not. He is
I don't know, Slasher, if we're getting off topic here, but no one's questioning the news that you... Like, no one's saying you're reporting false news, so it shouldn't be a shocker that people are using your news without batting an eye. It's not information you own. The question is, when you release the information...
On the show to make a point for you. You use my news to source yourself. But my point is, to complain about the thing originally, you would have a problem with me even tweeting about that about Naniwa. If there's such an issue about me saying who's going to be signing, even rumors of signing...
Slash, I think you're way off base, man. Like, once you break the news, it's fucking public, man. I'm not going to like pretend to go back and be like, as sourced by Slasher from GameSpot, it's just news that gets broken. The question and what we're talking about, and you need to focus because this is getting a little bit outside your bound here, is we're not talking about the news itself. We're not talking about who reports it. We're talking about when. And we brought up the point that you actually talked about news after it broke by the respectable team and interviewed Thorzane, and it went well. The question was, why was that so unproductive that you had to change into, well, now I'm going to break the news? So the question you could have answered is, well, I've actually noticed a spike in my page views, or I've noticed that I'm getting more attention with this. If you want to get, you know, start talking about, like, if you're asserting that I'm using your information to make myself seem more legitimate, we can have that debate, Slasher, because quite frankly, you would fucking lose. But if you want to talk about when we announce announcements and whether it's a good thing for you, which is good for everyone, or a bad thing for the team, which is legitimate or not legitimate, then we should have that discussion.
All I'm saying is, when you were talking about Naniwa, you used info that I tweeted, which is in the same vein as the articles that I released, which you have a problem with. So, but you use it fluently as it's like it's okay and there's not a problem. So,
Slasher. I mean,
I'm releasing the articles about this. I am not beholden to the teams or the leagues or anybody else about what I'm just supposed to be writing about them, bad, negative, or if something happens beforehand.
But then anyone
can get information not from those sort, you know, from outside sources. It was never from the team or league in question.
Okay, let's try this. Let's try that. Slasher, you actually have made that point well, and we understand it. Let's try this. Let's try actually answering Jeff's question.
It's about the hype, right?
Yes. Will you please talk about the hype and not about the fact?
We can use EG as a great example. I released a Stefano was going to be signing to EG. It hit number one on Reddit StarCraft. It has, like, I think number two most upvotes ever for, like, a trade thing ever on Reddit. And there's a ton of people. There's a huge thread. And then ES Sapphire World, a week later, did another, like, going to be signing soon announcement, which hit, like, number two or whatever. And then there was still the EG video, which we all remember because it was awesome, and we all watched it anyway. And then it was another gigantic announcement, and the video was huge, and none of it was lost. It was just a Sapphire hype train from 2 weeks long.
Okay. Let's hold on. That Slasher. Hold on. Why do you always bury yourself? You make a good point. Let me build off of this. Okay. That's great. You're absolutely right. And I was asking about this earlier. I was asking about instances where an announcement created hype versus stifled it, right? Now, talk to me about Snoot. Talk to me about the hype of Snoot.
I think the hype for Snoot is pretty good.
You don't think that you stifled it with an announcement ahead of time?
I think that Victor is probably okay with it. And I actually think all team owners are all right with it.
Okay.
In all honesty. And from the ones that I've spoken to, none of them feel that they've been hurt or would be hurt by me releasing this info beforehand. And I think it did not hurt Snoot. No.
Do we have a team owner that would like to come on the show and talk about that?
Well, I mean, there's
potentially.
Right. And then still had a Team Liquid video, which was on the front page of Team Liquid. And everything still happened anyway. The teams were still able to make their announcements. They were still able to make their videos. They're still able to plug their sponsors. And they're still able to put in any of the assets that they needed to. There was just an additional announcement that they made, which made the news rounds another time because all the community sites pick up each individual story. So every time there's one story made, let's say my story, about either Axiom for Heart and Alicia, Snoot, or EG with COG and EU, it goes to every single community site at Team Liquid, the Surrender 20, you know, Ghost of Gamers, et cetera, and then it goes again each time there's a new news cycle. Okay. So the hype is actually furthermore each time, especially with tweets and Facebooks and all that.
Before we bring Alex on, let me just put this out there, because yep. I think this gets kind of lost in the fray. I want to establish very clearly that this is really just my opinion. I think what Slasher does absolutely could be argued is his job, and it's fine. And I would not look at that person and be like, you're in support of genocide. Like I don't look at that person and think that. So Slasher, at the end of the day, like, I know I hope you understand this. Like I actually disagree with you from an opinion standpoint. And I'd love to hear more about it. So that's why I kind of raised my voice when I feel like you're moving away and taking jabs. I feel like we're losing an opportunity for me to understand why you feel what you're doing is the correct path and potentially win me over. Like I'm not a journalist. You actually know better than I do. Your boss tells you how good of a job you're doing. So you actually fucking know if you're doing the right thing or not. I'm trying to tap into that because from my outside perspective, I feel like you're not doing it right. So that's why I'm saying, like, when you hear my argument and you answer back like, well, you're using information to make yourself look better, then I'm like, well, let's have that separate argument. If you really feel like that's a problem, let's talk about that later, because right now I think this is a good opportunity.
I just wanted to use that to say that the information is important and awesome. That I wasn't trying to say it was...
By the way, we're bringing Alex on because we have the opportunity to bring on Alex as well as an additional team owner, so I'd love to be able to get multiple perspectives. So I'm bringing Alex on right now. And all right, so we also have Alex Garfield on from Team Evil Geniuses now, and we are currently discussing the point of specifically the hype and sometimes the thought of anti-hype as it relates to the leaking of these announcements. But Alex, you've been listening. You want to give your comments on this, and then we can have Rod respond.
Hi, Rod.
Hello, Alex.
It's funny. I want to ask so we can avoid like another, you know, EG ganging up on the guest thing. Just ask my players to politely not interrupt this lively debate that Rod and I might have for a few minutes. And I'm going to say some things. And for those watching, like, if you agree with me or you disagree with me, post this on Reddit, because like this discussion needs to be had. It's needed to be had for a long time. Like so I'm just gonna say some shit, and Rod, you can try to explain why you disagree with me, because this is not a new conversation between the two of us. I've explained these points to you on 3, 4, 5 different long conversations we've had about the nature of the kind of journalism you do and the kind of journalism that's in esports and why it can be so much better. So there's none of this should really be a surprise to you, but I'm just gonna share some of my thoughts. So like, the first point here is, like, what bothers me the most about all of this leak journalism is that you help nobody. You help yourself, and that is it. You help yourself at the expense of everybody else, because you don't add any eyeballs to the equation. There's no singular press in the entire industry right now, aside from maybe Team Liquid, who absolutely does not do the kind of journalism that you do, and then Reddit, which is more of a collective media entity. There's no singular media entity, not GameSpot, not anybody else, that has that kind of power to add eyeballs to that equation, to have that kind of value proposition as a journalist, to go to somebody like me and say, hey, if you let me leak your news, it'll be better for you. That is one of the many key differences between what you do and what journalists from ESPN and in real sports do. They actually have some kind of value proposition where you have none. And I've said this to you many times. So You don't help me because you don't get any more eyeballs. You don't add any value to the spectator experience by spoiling the announcements of major teams because, like, last I heard, you don't run Slasher Entertainment and Media where you make pretty splash pages and videos. Like, we do entertainment and media to get money, so we're better at that than you are. And you're not going to create a better announcement experience than the EG Media team or the Team Liquid Media team or Total Biscuit will on YouTube. You're just not going to, unless you have some kind of like underground operation sewers going on that you haven't told us about. So you don't help the teams with eyeballs. You don't help the spectators with the viewer experiences. And beyond that, you actually hurt. You actively hurt the relationships and the give and take that make our industry even possible. Like, where do you think the money comes from? What do you think the sponsors pay for? They pay for marketing. They pay for exposure. And when you go and leak announcements, not only do you provide no value for anyone except for yourself, you steal value from the companies that support our industry. You decrease the number of eyeballs they get from what they should be getting out of their announcement. You actually make the team look bad because then we look like we're not able to manage our press relationships and manage our value propositions to our sponsors.
So
like, companies know you and they hate you. This is not real sports where a huge portion of the money, the majority even, comes directly from spectators, get ticket sales and merchandising and paid for media. It's esports where 99% of the money comes from advertisers who pay for what you steal.
All right, so a lot of points put out there specifically on this one, Slasher, because you're kind of talking about this. What is your response? What is your response as you know in your journalistic position?
That's a whole lot there, Alex. You seem very heated on this. When did this become What's Wrong with Journalism Hour? We're not doing What's Wrong with EG Hour.
Are you going to answer any? I can keep going if you don't want to the things I just said.
Sir, I mean, Slasher, here's the opportunity.
I get all of it. It's just I'm not concerned with your announcements and how you're doing them.
You're not concerned with anybody except for yourself. You're not concerned with anybody except for yourself.
But my job is to cover all of you, everything as a collective.
Your job is to do journalism, and you do some of the laziest, worst journalism I've seen in your entire career. Like, I'm so disappointed in the journalism you do because you could do so much better. Like, everyone who knows you knows that you're a really, really, really intelligent person. And you do these like these lazy leak announcement videos and these like interviews on site. When you look at like some of the stuff that ESFI has done, where they actually take a week and they do a real article, like the article ESFI did about the Gwynn incident, or the article that Rob Zachney did with me at IPL. They take time. They do a week to do one piece that's really good. Like, this is 2013, and the spectrum acceptable journalism is you leaking other people's stuff and showing up and like with a camera and doing something. Like, are we serious? Like, you could do so much better.
One thing, now you're not just attacking me. You're attacking GameSpot, the whole team that does all video work, all my company.
You can call it constructive criticism. I'd like you to tell me why I'm not right. Why am I not right?
Yes, that's true.
Tell everyone who's listening why am I
have done
right.
Multiple, very, very long interviews with team owners, league owners, and developers over my time in esports with every major developer. And
then why don't you do them?
Including yourself, I have done them before. So then you make it seem like I don't do it, which is completely ridiculous because I have for many years, and you should know that because you've known me for many years. So to say
why don't you do them? Like, going back to the question that Jeff asked you, why?
I'm doing a lot of different things at one time. I'm not sure if you've noticed or not. But there's many different avenues to take in doing articles along the way. It was just me, pretty much, at GameSpot doing everything. That includes
the fact that they are different does not mean that they deserve to all be there.
All right, we need to stop now for a second. Slasher, you've got to turn your microphone down. Like, we can't even have a discussion if I can't hear half of what you're saying.
Right.
Just throwing it out there while Slasher's turning it down. Alex, you talked about some of the anti-hype. I think we're also going to get a chance to talk to TB, just for his perspective from Axiom. But let me ask you this. One of the things Slasher brought up was the Stefano announcement, which, as Heath sort of puts it, had two layers of hype before the video that came out, which arguably brought, you know, a whole nother layer. Do you think in every single instance where this has happened, that it has turned out bad, or do you think that there have been instances where
I'll give you a perfect example. Like, that's the perfect example. Let's talk about Stefano and let's talk about Snuta for a second. Like, the Stefano video was gonna get a lot of views whether we announced the news itself 2 weeks ourself and released the video later, because it was an awesome video. But you should not, as a team, have to produce a video like that has a lot of entertainment value for humor and other things to get good value out of your announcement. And everything Rod just said about the Snuta announcement is complete bullshit. Like, you absolutely killed that announcement. And I talked to Victor about this, and Victor is not happy. In fact, Rod, what you did with the Snuta announcement, you might have just caused a team union against you. There's a conversation among a large group of teams about boycotting all interaction with you. So for you to say that the team owners don't mind it is one of the biggest pieces of BS I've ever heard you say.
Well, so you are suggesting now, this is what you're saying to everybody, that you and Team Liquid and other team owners are going to form a union or whatever, not to talk to me because I released articles based upon sources, each of them valid and to be true, about signings that were happening that are all accurate.
So that's how you would summarize what I just said.
Mm-hmm. Really? Because I just want to be clear that is actually happening.
What I've said is that you have pissed off so many people because you continue on occasion after occasion after occasion to ignore calm, logical, value proposition-based conversations and do things that only help yourself, that now we're just not going to talk to you anymore. Like, every relationship is a give and take. Every conversation I've had with you about this has been, like, on the foundation of that. I've said that the relationship between the press and the participants of the industry is a give and take. And if you keep ignoring that, people are going to stop wanting to talk to you. They're going to stop flat out working with you. And that is now happening. Because the journalism you do when you leak announcements, it is good for you and it is good for nobody else for all the reasons I mentioned, none of which you have responded to.
I mean, Slasher, just...
I am releasing news. This is news, okay? This is esports. You guys make, as team owners and league owners, the comparison to sports all the time, in pitches, in meetings, to everyone that you talk to about how these are athletes, these are people that we should respect and players that are performing at a high level, tons of fans around the world use this all the time. This is the same media that is used in traditional sports
it's not journalists around the world.
This is the standard. I've explained this to you already.
I've explained it to you.
You tell me it's not between sports and esports because it's not there yet. I understand.
Like, can you respond to a single thing I've said? I just 10 minutes ago told you why it's different. Like, you have a mainstream sports industry which has funded at least half, if not the majority of the money, comes direct from spectators, comes from ticket sales, comes from merchandising, comes from pay-for-media, where the consumers of the product are actually paying for their cable access to ESPN or whatever, compared to the esports industry, which is 99% advertising and sponsorship-based. It is a massive difference. So you have still not even attempted to refute what I said about this approach to leaking these announcements helping only you, not the spectators, certainly not the teams participating, certainly not the companies that fund the industry, only you. And I would really like to hear why that is not right.
Because these are things that are happening in the industry for the fans to know.
So you're saying it's not you as a team owner
to hold back what is happening
You can announce Jae Dong with a three paragraph article on GameSpot better than I can announce Jae Dong with a 5 to 10 person staff doing an amazing splash page. You can do that better.
That part doesn't matter if you can do it better, you can do it better, and you should do it better, and they still will do it better anyway. I still need to do my job, which is to report information to the public, which includes everything, not just the teams, what players are signing, but also what leagues, what games are picking up.
Can I jump in real quick? Because, Slasher, I feel like this is like a really good point. It is your job. You are doing your job, but I don't think you've answered the question. Like, when you play along with the people you're reporting on, like with the Thorzane report, did your boss come to you and say, this is not enough, this is not good enough? And did the community like report, oh, who gives a shit about Slasher's interview, that you then had to say, well, this isn't working, so instead of working with the teams, I'm going to get the information, which is still your job, I'm not disputing that, but then report on it outside of the desires of other people?
Alex, have you ever come at me with an embargo?
Yeah, many times. Can I make sure I understand?
Did you come at me with a Pro League embargo?
What does embargo mean here? Does it mean banning you from interviewing my players because you cannot accept boundaries and keep to your word? Because that's happened many times too.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
You can talk about this information on January X.
Did you ever come to me with some type of agreement for Pro League ever? Maybe releasing information beforehand?
Yeah, and I don't understand why you don't stick to that stuff.
No, you did not do that at all.
Yes, I did. I'll tell you exactly what happened about Pro League. You, when EG and TL were jointly crafting our splash page and our two announcements that we wanted to hit the community, and we thought would be the best way to announce things to the community, you came in and you were like, I'm going to leak this. I'm going to spoil the whole thing. And I had to go to you, like I do every damn time this happens, and explain literally, almost point by point, the same thing I'm saying to you right now. Like, none of this is new to you. None of this is new. I said the exact same things to you with the EGTL thing that I'm saying right now. You're not going to add any value to the community because EG and TL are going to do a joint announcement that would be better than any leak or news post you will do from the spectator perspective. You would hurt two of the biggest brands in the industry on the team side of things. You would hurt all of their sponsors. And at this point, it's not even like you'd be adding anything to the journalistic equation. I said to you, if you want to do journalism, you should have gotten GameSpot to send you to the freaking press day that they have in Korea to interview the players and the teams there sitting at the table in front of the step and repeat after it's announced. That's journalism. So why don't you do that?
Let's get some final thoughts here from Slasher.
I think we've had a very healthy discussion here. I still think I'm doing good journalism there for the people, and I think the people should decide how they feel about teams all banding together to not talk to an outlet and a journalist.
When it's you, I think people would probably be fine with it. I would like to encourage our audience to go look at some of the journalism that ESFI has done in the past. Look at the journalism that Rob Zachney at PC Games N does. Like, that's the kind of journalism we need in this industry.
The examples that you gave are things that I have done. I go to events and do real interviews all day long, 10 to 15 to 20, every single event that I go to for every genre, and that includes written with all.
All right,
people.
We're
nobody's
again
disputing that.
I'm gonna stop because we're just talking
spoilers.
I want to try to come out of this with some level of like, hey, we're actually trying to accomplish something. So I just put this out here one more time. Earlier, Slasher, I asked you if you were approached with an embargo that was specifically stated, here is said information, and on this date you can talk about it. Would you uphold this embargo? And Alex, you've mentioned that you've done it before, but do you think that team owners would actually do this in an effort to try to protect their information a little bit better?
Yes. And to prove my point, I will finish the EGTL Pro League story. Rod, what did we agree when you agreed not to leak the news? I said, I will give you an interview the next day or within 24 or 48 hours. You had the rights. You never came back to me.
I want mainly the news, though.
But
I want the news.
Whoa! You can't just ignore everything I say and change the subject. Like we had a value proposition there. You got something out of it, and the community would have got something out of it too, because they would have gotten a great piece of interview coverage, analysis, whatever. After the fact, you had the exclusive on that piece of content. You did not use it. You did not come back to me. You never said a thing about it after then.
So are you saying, Slasher, you would be willing to do that, though? Like, I mean, attempt being made here? Alex says he's going to extend it. Maybe it, other...
The trade-offs are exclusive interviews. This is what we're talking about, exclusive interviews versus...
The trade-off, let's be real here. The trade-off is more work for you to do an actually a good piece. It's more work for you rather than sitting back and stealing someone's news. Like, let's just say it. Like, that's why...
I guess
Slasher just, you know, didn't want to get out of bed today and actually write a real article. I was like, okay, well, that's too bad.
People do not have to talk to me. They have never had to talk to me. They've never had to. I don't force people to.
I wouldn't worry myself or any other team owner wanting to talk to you. So,
all right, let's. I mean, we got some good points from both sides.
The embargo idea, but if Alex doesn't think that it's worth it,
no, man. I'm sorry. I'm done with you. Yeah, you burned that bridge.
There you go.
I mean.
Good talk.
All right, we'll let whatever needs to be discussed offline be discussed offline. Alex, thank you for your comments.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And have a good evening. Let's actually one sec here.
TB coming on?
Yeah, I'd like to have Total Biscuit come on. Slasher, if that's okay with you. I mean, I think it'd be proper to get multiple perspectives. And like, just from where I stand, as I see it, you know, you've definitely got someone who's, like organizations who are trying to protect their assets. You know, obviously they feel like, as Alex said, they can make a better announcement than you could ever do leaking, you know, the information. And you are essentially taking the stance that this is what I do. This is the news, and you did, you know, defend yourself. You have done interviews. You have judged Guitar Hero for WSVG. You've obviously tweeted, yeah, you know, the whole gamut. But taking that stance. No, it's fucking awesome, man. I mean, I know.
I'm teasing.
So. I'm gonna bring on Total Biscuit because this also kind of happened around the Axiom thing as well. I don't know what TB's stance is on it, but I would imagine as a new team, I've got an idea. However, who knows? He might surprise us. I'm going to go ahead and bring TB on now. For those that
I don't know what he's going to say either, but can I say this?
Yes.
He's going to say it with a better voice than the rest of us.
You're right about that. So, TB?
Yep, you got me?
Yeah, we got you.
Wonderful.
You've doing great. Hope you're doing good tonight. You've probably undoubtedly been listening to the conversation, and I think we're all kind of eager to hear a third perspective on it. You know, obviously, previous guest Alex hits a little bit close to home, but you were sort of a part of all this as well. So please give us your perspective on it, if you would.
All right, sure. Yeah, the first thing that I want to say, by the way, is that Mini Wheat has added some amazing ambience to this entire talk. It's had me cracking up.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for that, because that was hilarious. Pretty much, man. Yeah, you know, he thought this through. This was well planned beforehand. I don't blame him. I can totally understand. The second thing that I'd like to say before I kind of go into the whole discussion is that I'm a little disappointed. I only say a little because I'm kind of used to how the community seems to react to this stuff, as to, unfortunately, how some people within the forum community, whether it be Reddit and Team Liquid, are actually reacting to this discussion and just engaging in a bunch of bullshit ad hominem. And it's unfortunate that we can't have this discussion without people's need to call someone a douche or someone an asshole.
Right.
You know, if we want to talk about hurting esports, then as cliche a term as it is, then that's a good place to start. Let's have a look at home first before we do anything else. As regards to the whole Axiom thing, it's an interesting situation for us because essentially what happened with the Axiom announcement is that I gave Slasher a little bit of information knowing that he would run with it and knowing that he would come to a certain conclusion. And also knowing that he would not have the biggest sting in the tail in the information, because we knew for a fact that information was completely and totally locked down. So when he went live with his announcement, we knew that he would not, in fact, know about Scarlet, which was the biggest part of our announcement. And we also knew that that would actually give us a really nice follow-up. Now,
damn
in
it.
The sense... Oh, there is. Am I still here?
Yeah.
You're fine. Sorry, man. Fantastic.
No problem. So the thing that Alex said was certainly valid in that, yes, we can make a better announcement than Slasher. I'm fairly sure that, honestly, Retarded Cat could make a better announcement than Slasher. It's not really that difficult. But the thing about, and the reason that I spoke to Slasher in the first place, I spoke to Slasher off the record knowing that he already had sources on this, because what he knew when he came to talk to me was a little bit too accurate to be complete guesswork. So, you know, the way that off the record obviously works is he's not going to go and throw something out there and say, you know, this is confirmed by the team owner, blah, 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 and betray my confidence, because if he did that, that would be stupid. But the thing about off the record is that if Slasher has two of the sources, then he is going to be able to go live with that information. And even though he's not going to be quoting me as a source, he's going to be quoting somebody else's source. So, you know, I went into that conversation fully knowing exactly what he was going to do. And the reason I did it is for the reason that Slasher claimed. Now, here's the thing. When Slasher says that you can get a ton of momentum going on Reddit prior to the announcement, you can essentially create a hype train, you're absolutely right, but only in certain circumstances. I know that I'm going to crush with any announcement I put out, and we're going to get a shitload of views. In under 24 hours, we got 68K views. That's going over 100 by the end of the week. That's, you know, this is a huge deal. Our announcement, even though apparently he spoiled it, was an absolute express train. Nothing was stopping it, and stuff is still coming up on Reddit. For fuck's sake, I've got a tweet up on StarCraft Reddit right now just because I said, hey, we might have got a sponsor. This, and there's another one right below it about Team Acer confirming the same news, still up on the front page. So this was a deliberate, calculated move by myself to make sure that this happened. However, and this is what I've got to say to Slasher on this, this only works for, like, two organizations. Like, this only works for the kind of people that have the massive clout to be able to put out an announcement in such a way, and with such production value, I might add, that it's going to impress people regardless of what you say. And let's be honest, there's not all that many situations where we can kind of lead you by the nose and have a little sting in the tail that you don't know about that we can then follow up with. So I've got to say to you, Slasher, that I do kind of agree with Alex in the terms of, if you actually work with the organizations directly and don't do so in a kind of I'm digging for dirt kind of way, and you come to us and you ask for content, you will get it. You know, you will get this stuff, but, and it's odd because it's fairly rare that you ask us for it. I know you've spoken to Jenna in the past, and you've interviewed me at, like, one event, I think. And it just seems to me like you could be doing a lot more of that. And interviews aren't really that hard. You know, I do them all the time. It's actually really easy content. And people want to read them, especially if they're with very interesting personalities. And you've got to see from the perspective of the team owners here. You know, I'm not as pissed off as, you know, I'm not actually pissed off at all, as I said. But Alex, you can see Alex's perspective on this, surely. You know, he's pouring a lot of money into an industry, and your job is kind of tied into the fact that this industry exists. And at the moment, StarCraft is not sort of huge enough to be able to put out an announcement and have everyone really, really care about it regardless, depending on what team you happen to be. There's a lot of smaller teams that we need to really be a part of this scene in order to make it healthy, make sure there's plenty of choices for smaller sponsors to go to and say, hey, I want to advertise product. Make sure that there's a mid-tier, really, to the entire scene that helps support it and make sure that we have a really vibrant scene. And what you're essentially doing, especially when you break this kind of news, is you really take the wind out of the sails of people that don't have the marketing clout that I've got. And I think it is something that you do have to consider. And I feel that you can still break exclusives in such a way that doesn't involve hurting people's announcements. You can do it with interviews. You can do it with collaborative content. You can do all of these things, but you can't just wait for people to come to you. You got to go to them. That's what a journalist does. He goes to the person he wants to talk to and he says, can we have a conversation about something? I want to set up this piece. Let's do a little bit of quid pro quo. And
what do you think about that, Slasher? Because I actually told the story. You remember that story, Slasher? I was telling him about, I think it was during the Thorazane thing, where I suggested, like, I think that the exclusive interview is better than breaking the news. But what's your thoughts on that? Like, going in for the content and actually taking a different approach, which is like, well, if
which is
I can,
what I've been asking the whole time.
Okay.
I am actually doing that already with another entity who approached me in this manner to do it.
So
your answer is that you do it.
You can express
better
that,
or worse, it's just that you do it.
I also have been, when I go to the events, I really do 10 to 15 to 20 interviews every single
Yeah, you do. They're great. Event. I don't think anyone would argue.
Doing so many interviews already, I guess.
Okay, so, let me approach this from the perspective of someone that makes content for a living and understands the notion of how you properly monetize that content and get people to give a shit. Now, YouTube has got a really big problem. It's called content oversaturation. You may be familiar with it. StarCraft II tournaments are suffering from it. Here's the thing. You can only put out certain amounts of content over a certain period of time because the more you do, the more diminishing returns you get. People cease to give a shit. The problem with events is that they are a gigantic content saturation ball where everyone is making the same shit. So you've got 10, 20 organizations, including independent interviewers. For God's sake, I was interviewed by a 12-year-old at IPL who, quite frankly, did a pretty good interview, and he should get all the praise for that. And they're all doing the same thing. They're interviewing the same people, and they're putting this content out over a fairly short period of time. And the reason they're doing that is because the later you wait, the less relevant it becomes.
Damn it. He'll come back. He came back both times.
Marcus, did I cut out there? Or?
Yeah, you just cut out briefly.
Apologies. There. What's missing from it? Do I have to fill in the blanks?
No, I pretty much, I get it. I mean, I know that too. You put out like 30 things in a weekend, no one's going to see it because it's too much content and it's impossible to watch all of it.
Yeah, so basically what I'm saying is, yeah, it's actually very easy to get interviews at events. And yes, it's very tiring. There's no question about that. And you know, you are doing your job. But getting interviews outside of events is the best time because you have a community that hungers for news and yet isn't getting it. Events produce stories all the time, whether you do it or not. Yeah? They spontaneously produce content. You don't need to be providing that content because either someone else will or the event will in and of itself, and then the community just writes the story. Yes?
TV, go ahead. Finish.
I was going to say, what you need to be doing is, you know, if you want people to care about your interviews, you need to do them outside of these events. You need to be consistently producing content outside of these events that interests the community that people can't get anywhere else. And you know, this is what I feel you should be doing more because I feel that it would be better for your site. It would be better for everybody else. And people are going to respect you more, and people are going to read your stuff. And actually, you know, people did, and some people still do really respect you as a journalist because you used to write really good stuff. And I just want to see more of that.
I do have two interviews coming. I am not opposed to this. I just feel like I don't want to like. Is the stuff I'm trying to do? Is the stuff that I have done? When is that going to be okay to do? So let's say if I stop doing that. And ESFI is never supposed to break a player signing ever. Is everyone supposed to just not do this? That's basically what Alex is saying should happen. Not just me, because I have the power to, you know, spread it everywhere and for it to get picked up by everybody. But if
kind of like he said, he wasn't upset at all when you did it for him because he has the clout. The point that people are trying to make that I feel like is not really getting answered is. Because here's the thing, to the response you've given each time is, I do those interviews. I have done those long pieces. And Slasher, I think the point that's getting missed here is that everyone comes to know you as an amazing journalist that does do that work. They're not questioning that you never do it. The question that's being asked is, why with this successful model of what you have done that didn't rustle people's jimmies and is really good, did you then make the switch to, well, I'm more interested in the news. I want to break news with my legitimate sources on these organizations that then come back to you and say, well, look, if we didn't have clout, this would have really hurt us. Or another organization like EG where Alex says, you're actually taking money out of my pocket. The bottom line is I just want to hear an answer from you that's like, I realize the risk and I realize the concern, but literally breaking the news 2 days before the teams do it is so worth it. It's so legitimate that I take that risk and I'm fine with it. But all I'm hearing instead is, like, I do good journalism in other areas, and it's news, and it's my job, so I do it.
Well, no, I model it off of sports journalism, and then Alex's response is that the advertising industry is different, and that is why it is not possible to do the journalism.
Well, that's
which
true.
Is pretty much what it comes down to in the argument in return. But I'm still going to say it is legitimate for this industry to do what I'm doing if we're going to be concerning teams and players and a sport. It's freaking esports, all right? If we're going to compare it to sports all the time for everything else.
But it's not
I'm not trying to spoil the, you know.
Like Alex said, if the Yankees make a lot of their money off of selling seats or selling broadcasting rights for their games to whoever's broadcasting it. They don't make money off of putting up a big-ass announcement about A-Rod signing a new deal. But for EG, because teams are marketing agencies. That's how, at least that's how the good ones make their money. Mm-hmm. They make money by people seeing these announcements we put up. And EG in particular puts a ton of work into those announcements. So by taking viewership away from that, taking excitement away from that, and the excitement is really, really important, especially with, as I said, things like Snoot, but still for things like Stefano and Jadon who carry their own excitement, you know, taking that away, that takes away, that is actually how we make our money. And you can argue over the percentages to it, but it's still true. That is still definitely taking money away from us and taking attention away from us.
Yeah, may I add actually something to this, and this, again, from the perspective of a media producer and someone who also deals with stories. Now, here's the thing. When an announcement video like this comes out, the natural reaction from most people after watching it, if they're interested in it, is to hunger for additional ancillary content surrounding it. So what happens is you don't actually have to break a story. I never break stories. Yeah, I do journalism for gaming every day, but I have never broken a story ever, I think, in the 2 years that I've been doing this. And yet I get a shitload of views because you know what happens when a big announcement comes out? People want to basically devour as much content about this as humanly possible. And this is right. Where gaming commentators, critics, and analysts of the scene, which applies to everything in gaming, including esports, come into play. Upon seeing this announcement, I immediately want to hear what everybody else who matters thinks about it. I don't want to hear what Random Guy on Reddit thinks about it. I want to hear what DJ Wheat, what Slasher, what the players have to think about it. I want to see interviews going this. I want this to be discussed on shows. And, you know, why is there not a show running on GameSpot, you know, with Slasher hosting it? I mean, you know, you used to do that in MLG. It wasn't that hard.
So I would say, just like in sports, when they do it, half of that is just about what you're saying, because when I break the story, then I get to talk about it alone, and then everyone automatically believes me as truth, and then it starts to spread anyway, pretty much just like in sports.
Which is fine, but I mean, I've got to say, like, just to take a little example, the one that you went, I was kind of hoping you'd run more with my story and actually get some more information about Axiom, but I mean, reading your post, it was pretty threadbare. I mean, you know, you could have made yourself feel look pretty interesting based on information that you gathered from my tweets. And I know you know this because you mentioned it in the conversation. Like, you could have speculated on the team house on the basis that I said, you know, there's so much amount of money going here and some kind of currency. And that makes you look pretty damn smart. And the speculation is actually interesting to read. I mean, when I read your article, it, you know, I liked it because I got my Reddit hits from that. Yeah, and I got my hype train rolling so that when my announcement finally did hit, I was pretty much, you know, I was front page on SC Reddit for like a week. Yeah, and that was pretty good. Yeah, that worked out pretty well. But I wanted your article to suck less, really. I wanted it to be interesting. And because the thing is, here's the thing, I know you're a journalist, and that means that you are supposed to be doing more than just reporting what someone told you on Skype. I want to hear your opinion. I want to hear some analysis. I want to read some interesting speculation. I want this to really get fired up inside of me to the point where I want to hear more. I want to know more. And that's how the community feels. And you are in the best possible position to do that. And it saddens me that you don't do it enough. And I feel that that should be your priority, if anything.
I just want to take the moment, because obviously Slasher is a good friend, a co-host, and although a lot of this, when I kind of step away, look at it, may look like we're just everyone collectively shitting on Slasher, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that many of the things that Slasher has done, although Alex seemed to disagree to saying that it's done for Slasher, like, there's actually no one... or very few people, let me say, that I know that is passionate about esports as much as Slasher. And although Alex may say that, you know, it's truly kind of a selfish action, I think that it's more or less just a misguided action in some regards, because Slasher actually just, that is who he is. And so, I mean, Slasher just, for me to you, like, I mean, although there's been obviously heated discussions and debate about this, you know that sometimes I agree with you and sometimes I don't. But, you know, thank you for at least making the effort for the past 6 years. Because you're one of the few guys that's, you know, like, been around trying to do it. I don't know. Are you going to walk away from this changing anything, I guess? I mean, have you personally...
anything John, are you part of the team banning?
Am I part of the what, sorry? Your headset is terrible.
Yes, it is.
Are you part of Alex Garfield's banning me of talking?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, that doesn't exist, because he hasn't asked me about it as of yet. So I would imagine that that is simply in the works. I don't really go in for unionizing. I do my own shit. We're big enough to do our own shit. So if I decide I wish to talk to you, everything that I've ever said to you is always, you know for a fact I always have an agenda, and I know that you always have an agenda, and you get utilized because you are useful. And, you know, as a journalist, you are essentially a tool for our message. And
are you okay with that, Slasher?
There are some people that don't know how to use tools properly. And there are some people that are very skilled with tools, and they know which tool to use for the right job.
I like talking to John much more than Alex tonight. I think this was useful here. This right here was
very useful. He called you a tool and you said thanks.
Yeah, I was about to say. He was just
going to say, I'm pretty sure that, you know,
Alex,
that this has worked out fairly well for me.
You know, I mean, it goes back. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, it goes back to the comment I just made about Slasher just kind of not giving a fuck because he just loves esports. It's like, well, fine. If I'm a tool, at least I get to do what I love to do.
You know what? Look, I've gotten shit talked for so long by everybody at this point that, I mean, I understand all valid concerns taken into consideration. I think this would be a good discussion overall for everybody. And also about these embargoes, too. I mean, John, don't you hate... I mean, you go along with them, too. I understand the medium.
I absolutely don't hate embargoes. Actually, quite the contrary. They are so important to my industry. The lack of embargoes would be absolutely dreadful for games reviewing in general.
Do you think there's any room for an embargo-like structure within esports?
Potentially. But that would essentially involve teams having enough clout to make it happen. And it would involve someone like Alex actually sort of essentially unionizing people, just talking to the teams and having a general understanding that there is a set of rules. There's one thing that esports currently with StarCraft 2 does really, really badly, and that's called having rules for anything ever. We are really badly organized as a scene in general, especially in the West. And unfortunately, then you look at Korea and you have the opposite problem of ESF and KESPA essentially... I almost went there. Let's not go there. Yeah, exactly. I almost said literally Hitler, but that's just pandering. You have them with too much control and with some very odd ideas how things should be run that are contrary to the health of the scene. But you can understand why they do it, because they have a different perspective. I think that teams do need to carefully consider their relationship with the media, and whether it just be Slasher or indeed anyone, and put down a set of standards. And if they feel that putting embargoes up and seeing whether or not people actually abide by them is a good idea, then that's what they should be doing. What they should not be doing is assuming that their information is safe, because evidently it's not, and people like to talk. And when you've got a piece of information, it's great to be able to brag it to someone else, right? That's how people generally feel. So I think that everyone has to take a good long look at themselves on this issue, and that includes Slasher, I might add, bearing in mind that the scene that essentially pays his wages is reliant on not imploding, and contributing to that implosion is not a very good idea. And everyone just has to have a look at themselves and say, what can we do better? And how can we excite our community better? And how can we really energize the fan base and create ROI for our sponsors and make this scene healthier?
All right. I think we have had some good discussions, different perspectives taken. I'm glad that we got to get both Alex and you, John, on to kind of discuss it. Certainly similar but different perspectives as well. Slasher, I'm sure we might continue the discussion a little bit going into Live on 3 tomorrow, as I'm sure you're going to think about it. And then everything you wanted to say, you're going to probably want to say tomorrow. So you can tune into Live on 3 tomorrow for that. But we do need to wrap up. Any final comments, Rod and John, starting with you since you're on the call, and then I'll shift over to the guests. And the Muslim, get ready, because everyone wants to know. You have to be the final comment. So,
cool. Just,
yeah, that's what chat says. So, final comments, Rod, John.
Rod, go ahead.
I will talk more tomorrow. I think this is a good discussion. I will think about it. For tonight, I wish all of you guys good luck at IPO with Wings of Liberty and Dallas for Heart of the Swarm.
All right. Thanks, Slasher. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
John?
All right. Big thanks to everyone that got so excited over the Axiom announcement. Big thanks, of course, to Team Acer for partnering with us for this event. And obviously to GOMTV as well, who've actually helped us out with this and allowed us to facilitate everything and made everything as convenient and easy as it could have been. It was not an easy process initially. So big thanks to them, of course. Big thanks to all the fans of the team and all of our players. A special welcome to Alicia and Hart, our new signings. And, of course, thank you to everyone that subscribed to youtube.com/cynicalgrit and youtube.com/totalbiscuit.
All right. Thank you, TB, for coming on. Appreciate both guys. Slash, we'll see you tomorrow for live on 3. And have a good night. With that being said, we had a lot going on. You guys, myself included, we didn't really say much at all. Final thoughts to wrap the show. And guys, I'm sorry to say, but Goatlust isn't on Skype, so
yeah,
he wasn't on earlier. Yeah. But you know what? We're gonna make sure Goatlust returns next week. So don't shed a tear. We've gone over. Jeff, let's start with you. Final thoughts.
Well, it's kind of funny because I wanted to have this debate and show that we could discuss things and moderate it and bring someone on and have a discussion on something we really care about, but not have it spill over into some of the negativity that was our last episode. And I think we did that, and I know that Alex got really passionate, and I'm not going to speak on his behalf, but I think he was, you know, he got a little bit more mad than probably he would have liked it even himself. So, but all in all, I like that we're having a debate that both sides feel really good about, and I hope that people are witnessing that we're trying to be more fair about that. I know it's hard when three out of the four panelists are EG guys, so the easy assumption is that we're just going to gang up on them and beat them down. And I hope we didn't do that. I want to say, just like I tried to establish throughout the entire debate, I really do respect Slasher, and he has done great work. I hope nobody thinks that is the case, or the opposite's the case, rather. And I want to say that, you know, I'm glad he was able to come on, and he kept a pretty cool head, and we had a good discussion about it. So I appreciate him doing that, because it looked like he was going to get ganged up on, but he bravely stepped in and had a discussion about something that is pretty pathfinding, by the way. Journalism and esports, like, everyone compares it to sports and talks about that, but we only do that because we're not really sure where we're at right now in esports in terms of journalism. So I think the discussions need to be had, and I think people need to talk about it so they can formulate their own opinions. So I appreciate that. As far as myself, just thank you for everyone tuning in. We're really happy to be back, and hopefully this will be kind of like Inside the Game was, where it's every single week and you can count on that. That's the plan as far as I'm concerned, and see you guys next week. So thank you.
Greg?
I think the biggest takeaway from this is actually that Slasher is a good journalist, and that's why this matters. He's not some little idiot on Twitter retweeting headlines to his 5 followers and maybe once catching a break. Like, he's someone who can actually put out good articles and generate excitement, who has a big audience. And our point is that if you would actually work with the teams and get out additional exclusive content, or even just push our good, big, well-done announcements out to his audience, again, beyond what we can actually reach, then that would be better for everyone. Instead, by taking the lazy route and just putting out these pretty, like, honestly, I don't think he will defend his articles as being high quality. They are just interesting because they are news and because they are a scoop. By putting those out, he gets himself some easy viewership, and he doesn't really have to put much effort into it. But then it detracts from everyone else, and it doesn't build on anything. Like Alex said, he's not helping anyone except himself. And even then, he's probably hurting himself, because as was apparent, he's pissing off people who control the information that he needs to actually do his job. And also, as Alex said, again, taking away money from the industry that he feeds off of. So, you know, I just think it would be better if he cooperated with everyone. And everyone who says he is doing what journalists do, there's no doubt about that, but he's doing the cheap, easy part of journalism, and he's not really bringing anything to the scene that he's working with. I don't know. I think he can do better, in large part because he is good at what he does and he is passionate about what he does. And I don't know. I just wish he wouldn't take the easy route, or I wish he would just focus on the things he was defending himself with. Like he was saying, he does all these good things. He just needs to focus on those good things instead of doing the easy thing once in a while and pissing everyone off.
All right. Interesting final thoughts. And the Muslim.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. Like, everybody that's been speaking in the show is right. And I'm glad that Slasher feels strongly about what he does. Like, he wasn't like, yep, I did something incredibly bad. Like, he actually feels strongly that he's kind of in the right, which, you know, he is releasing stuff and he is getting views and he's doing his job. But one of the things that he said, which was he's releasing news kind of thing, he's releasing other people's news prematurely to when it's meant to be released, which is like the big thing that didn't really get answered. And if he was to like kind of, or if even if teams are kind of in the wrong here too, like if teams worked with him and he worked with teams, they could, or he could emphasize on what's already being done and help the whole thing hit a wider audience completely, which is ultimately what everybody wants to do, right? And then as a journalist, he can work on the news stories that aren't ever going to be released, such as like why a team disbanded or whatever, like TSL. Like, I'm never really going to hear anything about that apart from like little gossipy sources that I don't know whether they're true or not. And Slasher, no matter what people think of him, like 99% of what he releases is pretty darn accurate. So even though he's getting a bit of a bad rap, like if everybody, like these talks that are happening right now, I'm not a manager of a team. I'm not one of these guys that knows the deep details about any of it going on. But if guys can start being more productive together, and that's ultimately what everybody wants, to benefit each other, then that's cool, you know.
I have to just snowball off of your last point, the Muslim, because, you know, I'm not a team manager. I'm, you know, a fan who craves information. I obviously love to talk about various information out there. But, you know, I can understand how people might not be able to attach themselves to, say, the severity in which Alex sees it, because they don't have that on the line. You know, if the worst to them is like, you fucking spoiled the announcement, you son of a bitch, and you may, you know, like, it might be more personal. But it to me, it really is an interesting discussion across the board. And I don't know that there is necessarily a right or a wrong. I can see why it could be detrimental on a sponsorship through an announcement, or it could take hype away. I also really like TB's comments about how in some cases it snowballed the hype even more. So I do hope that at least, you know, we talk about these things, and I think we don't spend enough time saying, can anything come out of it? And I think one of the biggest things is, you know, twofold. A, you know, sort of respecting the information, knowing that if you get it from one location and you leak it, you might not be getting that information anymore. But two, I kind of do think after listening and hearing everyone's thoughts that there is still a problem with chitty chitty chat chat going on behind the scenes too, and I think that makes it sort of devalues some of the information, and then of course it gets even more devalued when it gets tweeted or when it gets broken. And I don't know if you guys agree or not, but you know, I would just ask everyone just kind of look at that and you know, do 50 people need to know about this piece of information that could potentially make or break an announcement. And that's not a defense on either side. It's just saying that, like, I know that I've been involved in conversations where, like, information's just been diarrheaed out. And I'm like, well, shit, now I know. You know, like, how many other people know that you just told 5 minutes ago? So it all becomes very interesting, but I love what the Muslim says about I'd like to see a more collective effort, because I do agree that if more effort was put into working closer with the teams, and even if an embargo system was created, that it would make that quality information, like what Alex talked about and TV and what all you guys talked about, improve a little bit. But I want to thank Slasher, Alex, and TB for all coming on. Hopefully we had a a decent discussion, and we can kind of continue this trend as we go on for Inside the Game 2013. That being said, I know we're late, 22 minutes over. We gave our final comments. Are you guys done? You want to wrap?
Just that we're sorry that Goatless couldn't come on. We miss you.
Next week we will see you, Goatless. Guys, I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank you to Muslim. Thank you, Idra. Thank you, In Control. Guys, we will be back here next Tuesday on OneMoreGame.tv. And, of course, we'll be having Live on 3 tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you're interested in maybe this discussion going a bit further, you might want to tune in for that. I want to thank everyone for coming back for our first show in 2013, and we hope it'll be a great one. We'll see you next time. We're out of here. Peace.